Good morning. 866-901-ADAM is our phone number. 866-901-ADAM. Good morning, Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam Carolla.
Good morning, Danny Bonaducci.
Good morning, Adam Carolla. Good morning, Brian.
Well, I think we'll be doing a little morning zoo. The gobbler's come out of retirement, everybody. He's going to be back with his morning zoo. If I can muster the energy.
Dick Gobbler dealing with these difficult times.
It's tough. Thank God he'll ignore it. And
yeah,
focus.
I was just thinking that.
Thank God he'll ignore it and focus on traffic. I now will listen to traffic just to fire myself up.
To get ready?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was driving in and I was just flipping around the stations and they're like, now traffic with. And I thought, I'm going to listen to this to fire myself up. Much like in sports, if another team says you're weak and they're going to kick your butt, the coach will put that press clipping up in the locker room and he'll show it to his team to get them angered, to get them riled, to get them fired up, to get their game face on. And I'll just listen. I'll think, I'm going to listen and see if whatever traffic report, everyone do this. Have some fun, you lemmings. You weak-minded lemmings.
Wait, which is it? Have fun by
have some fun.
You,
have some fun. Listen to those traffic reports. As a matter of fact, I command you to do it for the rest of your life. And tell me if you ever find one that happens to be in front of where you're heading. Because if you live around here, you'll hear about what's going on the DeVore Pass and the road to Zizix, and you'll think, I've lived here my entire goddamn life, and I have no idea where either one of those places are.
No, the road to Morocco with Bob Hope is as good as a traffic report here.
Right. And there'll be once in a while, you'll think to yourself, wait a minute, I think I passed that on the way to Palm Springs. That'll be the closest you'll ever get to a traffic report helping. Yet, everyone I ever talk to, they fight for it. Oh, what do you mean? Now, I realize that, I'm a time traveler. I really am. I'm starting to realize this. And I've been sent from the future, and I really feel like now it's just to be annoyed. At first, I thought it was to deliver a message.
Help mankind.
But now I realize no one's listening.
Turns out you're a cookbook.
Yes. To serve man. And I don't mind the part where you guys don't notice stuff. And I don't mean you guys, Teresa and Danny. I mean you guys, the people that are listening. Your job isn't to notice stuff. Your job is to do your job. Let me notice stuff. But then agree with me, would you please? Don't fight with me. My own goddamn wife will do this. You know, I'll go, what is it with these traffic reports? Who the hell? Hey, what do you mean?
I listen
to them. I like them. I live by them.
I've got some horrible news online, too. Somebody listened to you.
Uh-oh.
And bad news happened.
Got a ticket turning at a left turn arrow in Buena Park.
You've told us to just turn.
Yeah, but remember, just listen to him.
Yes, Joe.
Right at his command.
Hello, Adam?
Joe, yes, what happened?
Hi, how you doing this morning?
Good. What happened, my child?
No, Monday I was coming from Burbank, and it was probably like 12:30. And midnight, you know, almost 1 a.m.
And
actually, I'm real familiar with Burbank, so just for my own edification, what red light signal is this?
Oh, no, I was on my way from Burbank to Buena Park.
Okay.
All right.
And, you know, and I was talking to my buddy in the car, and I was like, I've been telling him about the left-hand turn, and I was like, turn, 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 just do it. And I've been telling him, I was like, Carolla says, just do it. You're never going to get caught, just do it. And I was trying to show off, and I was like, just watch this. Look, you're going to save a bunch of time, because we're wasting time at this light. And I was like, okay, let's just go. And as soon as I go, and I can't see because I'm in a van, and, you know, I just see the lights come up, and, like, I'm staring at the cop, and he's like, okay, what happened back there? And I was just like, I thought it was a green yield. And he was like, do you live in this area? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, you know, I kind of find it hard to believe that you just didn't see that red light. So he wrote me a ticket, and I want to know what the ace man would have said to, you know, BS his way out of that situation.
Well, he was sitting behind you while you were in the van?
Yeah, I didn't see him. He just popped out of nowhere. He literally came from nowhere. It was probably, you know, like I said, almost 1 a.m., and I didn't see anybody on the road.
All right. Well, first, just a word of caution for everybody who does this. As I always say, look in your rearview mirror.
Yeah.
Because what cops look for is people doing things wrong. when a cop is driving along at 55 and a guy blows past him at 95, the cop notices it. When the cop sees you swerving or darting or whatever, the cop notices sure. it. So a cop is sort of like a predator in the animal kingdom. They're just a lion walking up and down, and they're looking for rustling yeah. in the bushes.
And you're a weak gazelle.
Oh, not even that. Field rat.
And wow. you want to be a chameleon blending.
That's look what you want. Go. What predators look for is movement. And then when their eye catches movement, they pounce on that. Now, which you
God,
can't...
God, my wife is safe forever.
What you can't do is when you turn left and you ignore these arrows, as I do every single day, as I've been saying, and now that there's more and more arrows, I do it multiple times a day. And I've been doing it for years and years. I've never gotten a ticket because I look in the rear view. And if there's no cop behind you, then you don't look like you're doing anything wrong. Because if he's coming the other direction, well, you're just safely turning. And if he's parked facing the perpendicular to you, then it just looks like you're doing. He really can't see anything unless he's directly behind you looking at the red light. This guy was behind you. That was the problem. I would do this. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I would say to the judge, and I would fight it.
Singer's right there. I'm scared.
I would fight it, and I would say, here's the situation. I understand that we have these things here for safety when there's high traffic and high volume passing through the intersection, but it was what time? 1 a.m.? After 12?
Yeah.
It was late night. There was low volume, but a much higher incidents of drunk drivers being on the road and sitting there in the middle of an intersection after midnight when there's no traffic coming. I thought there was a greater chance of me getting hit by a drunk driver sitting there in the middle of the road than there was me making contact with somebody. And furthermore, why aren't these things adjusted? I understand they are on a certain time and cadence when there's a high traffic time, but in the middle of the night and there's no traffic coming and you're sitting there waiting to get carjacked or T-boned by a drunk driver, I think it's more dangerous to sit there. As a matter of fact, I've worked this out because there's a new left turn arrow I now make on PCH. And you sit on PCH and there are cars going past you at 55 on your right and then cars coming at you at 55 on your left, both missing your car by 14 to 18 inches as you sit there. And there's a story in the news a week ago about some prominent director and his son that were both killed on PCH when some drunk driver slammed into their car. Now, you tell me, what's more dangerous? You sitting in the middle of a fast-moving highway where traffic with no divider in between, just right. traffic coming at you at 55, if you're lucky it's 55, could be 75, and coming behind you at 55, and it's their opportunity to hit you coming both directions when you're standing still waiting, or turning left when there's no traffic coming. I would make that argument, and I would argue that the law is wrong, and I would argue the not the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. Yes?
Yes.
All right, Joe. Wait,
Joe, hang on a second, Joe.
But you got to let us know what's happening,
right.
too.
And I think when the judge admonishes you like crazy for telling that stupid-ass story you were just given, your fine is going to triple. When you look a judge square in the face,
they can't do
and
that.
You say, you know what, Your Honor, so I'm sitting there minding my own business at 1 in the morning, and I make this decision. There's nothing but drunks on the road. It is much safer to intentionally break the law that you believe you installed to save me and others.
At 5
p.m. That judge is going to go out of his mind at you.
No, he won't.
I would say I had to go number two so bad, Your Honor. I'm really sorry. That's what I'd say.
That's good, too.
That's good.
I like that one,
I
too.
Actually heard it from a guy who it was a real story, and I started carrying Pepto-Bismol half empty with me. And the cop would pull me over, and I'd just start chugging. And then go, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. I'm sick. And it worked out a couple times.
I actually have a better one. I like the second number two story. But here's another
number
one.
Number two story?
Joe. Yes. Another good one is I will bet you that arrow has been in place less than a year.
No, it's been, but the funny thing is that I had to drop that van off. It was a U-Haul rental. The funny thing is that when I came back to that light, the green light went. It went three times. Right, the lights changed three times. That arrow never turned, and we're sitting there again. And I told my buddy, I was like, just take the light. And then, but since I just got a ticket probably half an hour earlier than that, he was just, you know, he was like, no, you know, I don't want a ticket like that.
I appreciate that sidebar, but I'm still saying that I'll bet you that left that left arrow has not been there for a very long time.
As far as I know, it's been there for, as far as it's been there, ever since I know.
Thank you, Joe. But you evidently you have no idea how long that left turn arrow has been there.
No, I'm 19. I just got my license, like a year ago.
So. Oh, okay. Well, it hurt my argument, which is I've been driving these streets for years. Right. There was never an arrow there. They popped up 2 months ago or whatever. I'd driven through it 300 times before the arrow was there.
But, you know, I only thought this was how the show worked, Joe, but this is also how your life works. And everyone listening, you need to know this as well. When Corolla tells you, Joe, how long you been missing your left arm? And you say, I have both my arms. The girl says, no. How long have you been missing your left arm? And you go to tell him you still have your left arm. And for the third time, he says, no, you have no left arm. Just say, God, you're right. I didn't want to tell you, but I have no left arm. And life will move a lot smoothly for you.
Thank you. But listen, Dilweed, I asked you how long that left turn arrow had been there, and you said, it was red a long time after we dropped the van off. And then I asked you how long that left turn arrow had been there, and you'd said, I've been driving for a while. I asked you three times. You gave me no answer. That's why I raised my voice. All right, Joe, you're going to be late for junior college?
I'm actually on my way to work.
Ah, that's what I like. All right, look, buddy. Joe?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
But I do say to everyone, look in the rear view and then turn
he
left.
He actually copped to that. He did. He was in a van and couldn't see that there was a cop.
I understand.
Wait,
let me say something. If you look in the rear view and you can't see anything, right, then you're going to have to sit. Because you don't know if a cop's behind you. I will pay your ticket, Joe.
I thought that might be
But
coming.
Joe,
yes,
you sir. must prove to me that you attempted to fight the ticket.
Okay, we'll do. Well, either way, I don't care. I'll pay the ticket. The fight must go on in these left-hand turns.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
True
Thank
believer.
You.
You finished
right.
strong.
Joe, we're going to get your number. Kyle will get your number, and then I'll throw it away later on. But no, we'll get your number. I will pay your ticket, but you have to prove to me that you fought the ticket first.
Yeah, right. If you only had the time and you don't, so this is not a bit we can create because you're just too busy and I'm too busy, it would be very... You can appoint your own attorney.
Mm.
It would be very cool to appoint Corolla and have him go and explain to the judge why this was the safest choice to do this.
Well,
I'd love to see you in action in a courtroom.
What we're doing... It's very slow and insidious. It's like a cancer. Is we're slowing society down to a crawl in the name of safety. We all go to the, you know, our parents went to the airport. My dad was smoking, drinking off a flask, and walked straight out the door onto the tarmac and jumped onto the plane while it was still moving.
Yep.
It was a different time. Now we all get there, stripped down to our underpants. Last weekend when I was leaving Fresno, I happily watched them capsize my toiletry bag into a garbage can and then hand it back to me. And I just smiled because Lord knows if anyone ever raises their hand and goes and yells, what the F is going on here? You'll be arrested and dragged out of the airport. Well, it now takes a couple hours to get through the airport because we have a bunch of bizarre laws that have nothing to do with anything. And I'm sure the terrorists are laughing their ass off as everyone who passes through the Fresno airport gets all their toiletries thrown away. But the point is we've now spread this out into society. Everyone is just sitting at a red turn arrow waiting for the man to tell them it's okay to get on with their life. Meanwhile, no traffic's coming. It's the middle of the night, but we've all bought into it. Take the pill. Take the poison. It's safer. Slow down. It's safer. Everything is safer. Where's your seatbelt? Where's this? Where's that? Where's your light? Everything. And we just sit there and we all just slowly come to a stop. Is that what you want to do?
That's what you want with your life?
That's what you want. You want to just sit around while the man tells you?
The thing is they've lowered the standards too on who is the man. It used to be the man was the cop, the judge, somebody in real power.
Right.
At the airport, the man couldn't get his GED and became the man. And a lot of times the man is a woman. And this is one of the few times I've seen that being a celebrity truly does not pay off, or at least a pretty celebrity. I used to travel with Mario Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
The guy couldn't get 50 feet till somebody else pulled him over and made him take his shoes off and his belt off. And you could see people giggling behind him.
Sure.
And he'd get redressed, and he'd make it to another thing, and he'd be called over. And they'd be wiring ahead that Slater's coming by, make him take his shoes off. We're all watching. And the guy would, I mean, literally, they'd stop him every 100 feet and make him do it again. I couldn't believe it, yeah. It's like, it was the funniest thing in the world to make Mario Lopez take his belt off.
Is that what's happening to me? So I get pulled out of line and pulled over. I'm probably, I always just assume as much as the next white guy who doesn't look like a terrorist. But yes, how many times you seen the old lady patted down in front of you and all this? And yet we all just accept it. Why? Safety. Safety. Everyone hides behind safety. It's safer. It's safer. It's safer. Well, as I've always said, put a helmet on, wrap yourself in bubble wrap, and never leave the goddamn house. The whole safer part, this is what we love about this country. Meanwhile, all we do is focus on safety, but yet it's the kind of safety that doesn't seem to really be neither here nor there. Like I said, when it comes to putting seatbelts in school buses, we're not into that kind of safety. We're just into the kind of safety where the Ace Man got it. Lose a fresh pack of Oxy-10 in the garbage can over in Fresno. All right, and the tinted stuff, too. We need to take ourselves a break. You ever see Zit Medicine? Zit Medicine comes in two shades. It comes in tinted, and then it comes in, like, something they call clear or invisible or whatever, right. Except for it's white.
Yeah.
This is damn exciting stuff.
So you walk around, it looks like a seagull crapped on your head.
Right.
That's good
and
luck.
You're like, people are like, hey, the seagull crap on your head? And you're like, what are you talking about? And you're like, well, there's some big white goo on your forehead. And you're like, that's my invisible Oxy 5.
How is it that you're seeing it?
What do you have, some kind of special glasses?
You're a supervillain.
Just dynamite.
We'll take a quick break. Back with Monique. My big round chocolate ball of love. Next on the Adam Carolla Show.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Boca Raton, Florida. A 21-year-old woman was arrested on a charge of impersonating a sheriff's deputy after she pulled over a motorist, ordered him out of his car, and handcuffed him. The woman is the granddaughter of the co-founder of NASCAR. Definitely not a Jew.
Well, speaking of definitely not a Jew, Monique, one of my favorite people on the planet. Monique?
One of your favorite non-Jews?
Mm-hmm. Monique, how are you, my dear?
I'm fine, Adam. How you doing, baby?
It's good to speak to you. I feel so soothed whenever I speak to you, Monique.
Well, I'm glad.
I feel like you're just sort of the bosomy mom I never had.
You've never had a bosomy mom?
No.
Or just one of your own?
Well, Monique, can you say something especially soothing for Adam?
Sometimes you gotta think these out.
If it's any help, my mom would lock herself in the room and yell freak out. So if you wanna
freak out.
I think we would all like I could stop going to therapy if once a day for 2 minutes Monique threw her arms around me, pulled me into her bosom and said, "Baby, it's gonna be okay, child."
Is that all you need, Adam?
Just at the end of every workday, somewhere about noon, you just do that.
Well, listen, if I can't physically put my arms around you, I will FedEx you my bosom.
Yes!
It'll be here by tomorrow. At
overnight,
11.
Please. Monique, what are we talking about today? Flavor of Love Girls Charm School. How does this work?
Well, you know, did you watch it, Adam?
I watch everything you do. If you wiped your nose and threw away the Kleenex, I would scurry after it so I can put it in the shrine I'm building for you. No, but I did actually miss it, so I didn't see this episode. Tell me how it works.
Well, we took the ladies from the Flavor of Love show, seasons 1 and 2,
mm-hmm.
and we created a show called Charm School. And pretty much, for those of us who watch Flavor of Love, those women really showed us something different. Like, they were really to the left, which, actually, my belief is they really represent America because they came from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we really wanted to give them a chance to just get that dignity back and some redemption and just be the best person they could be. Some women came on the show to get that. Some women came on the show to get 15 more minutes of fame.
Mm-hmm. And when they're going to charm school, you're putting them through their paces, walking with a book on their head, showing how to stick their pinky out when they drink their tea, that kind of stuff.
Well, you know what? That was just one etiquette session.
Mm-hmm.
Do I necessarily believe in that? I got to tell you, Adam, I'm going to use the fork that can pick up the meat. Now, I don't know which right. one that is. So, you know, it was just a little lesson they had to go through.
Well, Monique, did you, I'm assuming you didn't go to finishing school yourself.
You know what? I did when I was about 10, 11. But I didn't finish it, Adam.
You didn't finish finishing school?
Oh, sweet irony.
You were done with finishing school one day in. And what, really, what is your background? Where do you hail from? What did you, you know, you went to high school and then you went off to college or you started doing stand-up? I don't know your background story, Monique.
I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did go to college. Did I finish? Mm-mm.
Mm-mm.
Because, you know what? I love the business of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember telling my dad, it's like, Daddy, you know what? I don't want to waste your money because I want to be an entertainer. So that's my road, you know. Started doing stand-up, fell in love with it, and that was 20 years ago.
I had the same conversation with my dad. It went, son, you're not going to waste my money. Wait a minute.
Monique, you described some of the girls as to the left. What does that mean?
That's how they dress.
Vote.
Oh.
Because I don't want to describe. What did you just say?
It's a long story. I learned from Dr. Drew what dressing to the left meant. I had no idea. Just a quick digression. When you're a guy and you're getting a suit tailored, the tailor will ask you, how do you dress? And that means, what side do you wear your junk on? And
that's charming.
I feel like I would have to look down to figure out what side my junk was on. I'm not sure where it's going
really?
Or what
See,
it's doing.
I have a way worse problem.
Hold on. As a matter of fact, it's trying to crawl up Teresa's leg right now. Get back here!
I'm
back in the
that?
House.
I don't have enough junk to dress on either side. I dress right where it sits.
You dress down the middle.
Yeah, I have no options.
I feel like
to the left is a slang I don't know.
Sorry, go ahead, Monique.
No, let me say the reason why I use that word is because most people have used ignorant. Those women were ignorant. Those women were stupid. Those women were, and I don't choose to use those words. So when I say to the left, it was just something that I'm not used to for my normal.
Uh-huh.
Some of those women, that's their normal. That's what they do. They weren't acting. They weren't putting on a front. That's who they are.
Well,
so when I say to the left, that's just my soft way of saying they were different from what I know.
Well, speaking of being different, last time I heard you in the news, you were railing against United Airlines. I didn't remember the full story other than I think somebody who was traveling with you was harassed, disrespected, or something. You were trying to establish a boycott of United. I don't know if this was about a year ago or so. What was the story with that, and what's going on, and how can I join?
Well, still, I have a lawsuit.
You do?
Yeah, because it was just a matter of disrespect. It was just a matter of disrespect, and I think now with the airlines, because of all that's going on, if you look at a flight attendant wrong, they can say, oh, my God, I feel threatened. And they can remove you from
right.
the plane.
I've had that happen.
Or worse than remove you from the plane, do what they do to me, which is punish me for 6 hours for the flight. Which I had a situation once where I sat down my cushy ass into first class, and I just stood there and watched a stewardess run around, help people with their luggage and whatever, and I was staring at a bottle of champagne that was sitting 3 feet in front of me in a cooler because I was the first seat in first class, and it was sitting right there. And I stared, and I stared, and I stared, and I stared at my glass, and I stared at the thing. And after about 20 minutes, I got up and I poured myself a cup, and she was like, sir, this is not a self-serve bar. And I was like, I'm just, helping myself because you're busy. Sir, sit down. And she freaked on me.
Yeah. Oh, they love that power.
Right. And I
freak
said,
freak out.
I said, basically what it's like is you weren't doing your job. You were helping someone else for the last 20 minutes. So I poured myself some champagne, which you would have offered if you would have gotten around to it, but you didn't. I know I shamed you by doing this. And now I will get the stink eye and the Salisbury steak for the rest of the flight right. because now I'm going to be punished. And I just yelled at her, hey, it's first class, baby. How about it? So you can get on their bad side early, and if you do, they'll either throw you off the plane or they'll punish you for the duration of the flight. In this case, what happened?
Well, in this case, it was strictly a matter of disrespect.
But how does that win you money in court? You know what I mean? When you sue somebody for disrespect, it doesn't seem like there's going to be a lot of money there.
I'll say this. I'm not sure what's going to end up happening. But I think what needs to happen is people need to speak out.
Well, like, tell us the incident. Tell us exactly how it went down.
I get on the plane. I'm in first class. My team gets on the plane. They sit in economy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the flight attendants come up to me, who was a male flight attendant, said, listen, if you don't tell your people to watch their attitude, I'll have them thrown off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he's talking. I said, excuse me? He said, like I said, you can't speak to me like that. Then he snapped his finger and said, well, I'll have you thrown off.
Wow, there you go.
So you had how many people in your, as we like to call it, your posse?
It's four.
Four Whoa. People.
And Monique, you were going to do The View in New York, yes?
I was going to do The View in New York. Uh-huh.
And who was traveling with you?
Hairstylist, makeup artist, and wardrobe stylist.
Wow. You see, as a dude, if you do that... If you use it as a guy, if you go, hey, I want to bring my buddy Rick with me, they're like, F off. But as a woman, you can have your pedicure, manicure, your masseuse. This is the person here. This person works out the feng shui, the dressing room I'm in. Everyone's like, yeah, right, here's a ticket.
Oh, I think Monique had to buy their tickets.
Oh, really?
I'm guessing.
Monique?
Well, fortunately, at this time, I didn't.
You didn't. Oh. All right. So they're in the back now. Are they drunk?
No, baby.
They're not.
They were four, three beautiful women, so non-threatening. Like, and the way they tried to tell the story was they were threatened and they were afraid. And since 9/11, they finally took. It's like, come on, guys.
Well, we were talking about this topic earlier, which is we're all so freaked out in the name of safety. Everyone just says, oh, no, do the right thing. I mean, when they turn these airplanes around because some guy got too drunk, I would be the guy on the plane yelling, please, let's go to Boston. You're ruining my vacation. No, we're going to turn around and land. Why? Because some wimpy old guys had too much booze? Strap him down to a seat and let's keep going. So she got her finger, or he got his finger into your face, and then what happened?
Well, at that point, I get up, I go ask the gentleman who was he referring to, because he said, your people.
Mm-hmm.
So who are you talking about? Because when I called my stylist, I said, Rhonda, what happened when you guys got on the plane? She said, Monique, we're not on the plane. We're still waiting to get on the plane.
Oh.
So I'm trying to figure out what he's speaking about.
Oh,
so when I get up to ask
people.
Him, I said, well, what people are you talking about? So he opens up the bin and he says, does this belong to you? So I said, oh, yes, that's my hair dryer. My hairstylist must be on the plane. Well, you better tell her. I said, once again, you can't speak to me like that. Well, I'm having you put off.
So
then
they just tossed you off the plane at that point?
No, another woman comes up to me. She is another flight attendant. She says to me, either take your seat or get off the plane. I don't believe you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you guys can't talk to me like that. So it just escalated from there. Then came the supervisor. Then the supervisor, she actually removed me. She asked me, could she speak to me for a second? I said, why am I being removed? So we went back and forth. I was on my phone.
Now, no point did you yell, don't make me take my earrings off?
Here's the thing. I knew that's what they were waiting for me to yell.
Uh-huh. They wanted to fire you up.
Yell it.
Yeah.
Of course not. So, you know, I just say to people, you know what? Be a little nicer. Be a little kinder. Because for all those airline people, it's not for us flying. You don't have a job.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I, first class used to be first class. It's not really first class anymore.
No, just a wider chair.
It's a little wider chair. And, you can get choice between the salmon and the steak if they're not out of the salmon by the time they get to you, which oftentimes happens in first class. But it's you pay another $3,000 for a flight to New York and you get another 8 inches of chair, but you get the same attitude.
Now, you know what I got to tell you, Adam? There's this one airline that there from time to time I have to fly on it if I'm going a short distance or something. Mm-hmm. And they give the best service, and that's Southwest.
Plug for Soul Plane? Oh, really? Southwest.
Yes, they sing little songs. They play little games. It's a fun time.
I know, but you know, I don't know why, but we're talking about the black experience in the air and Southwest. I don't know whatever happened to their lawsuit by a couple of women when the stewardess was doing the eeny, meeny, miny, moe thing. Remember that story? Do you have any thoughts on that, or do you know what I'm talking about?
I didn't hear about that story.
About, it was about 3 or 4 years ago, not that long ago. You know how the Southwest folks like to have their little laughs?
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, get your seatbelts buckled up. We'll be landing in Lost Wages, Nevada. Sermon's a comedian, and I guess they did some sort of thing where somebody had to get off the plane or some baggage had to be removed or something, and the stewardess did this thing where she goes, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a tiger by the toe. If he hollers, let him go. Well, there was a couple of African-American women on the plane who were old enough to remember when that thing went eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a, and I think there's an N-word in there somewhere, by the toe. I don't remember it. I always just remember the tiger part, but somewhere the N-word was in there. Got swapped out with the tiger.
I'm older than you are. I remember that.
At some point, and they said that was racist. I don't think the 29-year-old stewardess from Phoenix knew what was going on.
The airline was acquitted. That was back in 2003. There was a lawsuit.
And they got off.
Yeah.
All right. So, Monique, that's fine with you, but United will not be so lucky, yes?
Well, United never has to worry about me flying their airline again. So they know how to treat human beings.
All right. Well, if you need a white guy who people think is Jewish, so they might be frightened of in a court of law, to stand beside you. His name is Adam Carolla, Monique.
Thank you, my sugar pie.
That's all I want. Monique, please come and see us in person when you have the chance.
You know what? And Danny, how you doing, baby?
I'm extraordinarily well. Thank you for asking.
I got to tell you, because I've never had the opportunity, huge fan of the Partridge Family.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You must have been very popular on your block.
All right, Monique, the flavor of Love Girls Charm School. Spinoff of Flavor of Love with Flavor Flav. VH1 Sundays, 10 o'clock, debuted with 5.1 million viewers. That is huge in the cable world. Find out what everyone's buzzing about. Monique, we'll see you soon.
Thank you, my baby.
All right. That's all I want.
Was that soothing for you?
I'm talking about a woman who would have been bosomy even if she didn't have an extra couple pounds on her, but now the bosom has just become a breast forest for you to camp in. Do you know what I mean? And she just hugs you, and she smells of too much perfume, but you don't mind. And she's got some kind of weird religious something hanging from her neck that's pressing into her cheek.
True that, peeps.
She's yelling, it's okay, baby. And you just feel wrapped in her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People are trying to get everyone to lose weight all the time, but there's nothing worse than a spindly mom. You ever get hugged by, like, your grandma and you feel her bones digging into your side? You don't want that. You want a nice, bosomy, husky, round ball of love just sucking you into her nest. Yeah?
Yeah.
Danny looks happy or upset.
A little of both. My first major weird experience last night in Gretchen and I's living together situation was very odd. And then the idea of being sucked into a bosoming breath sounds good. Mm-hmm. Then on the other hand, it sounds great. On one hand, it sounds really good. And on the other, it just sounds great.
I just like that I can now say some of the girls that you meet on MySpace are a little to the left.
Dude, I should show you this letter I just got now.
Is it to the left?
No, it's from my wife forwarded, and it's bad and it's filthy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's dated a long time ago.
Can you read it aloud on the radio?
Yeah, I plan to. I'm trying to call her because she won't answer the phone because she thinks I did something bad. I'm going, wake up so I can read this on the air and you can see how ludicrous it is.
We'll take a quick break. Hopefully we will be able to sort this out. If not...
Oh, it's
don't
wild.
Don't worry, kiddies. I got many more thoughts on this Virginia Tech thing. Still no news, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the videos came out since we last spoke.
Yeah, lots of stuff, but not the stuff I'm interested in. And then the video comes out, and people are like, wow, this guy was deranged. Oh, really? Huh. The 32 bodies, not enough to sway you?
Yeah.
But when you see the weirdo video, oh, boy.
And the reenactment of the play that was published, everybody did it.
Oh, really?
They reenacted it on the radio. They did the play.
Oh, they did the play.
Every single jock in this country acted the play out.
Well, tell you one jock that didn't.
Good. I'll tell you three that aren't gonna.
Name is Don. I'm with Carolla. We'll take a quick break. Be back with much more next on the Adam Carolla Show.
On the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, thoughts and ideas. First off, Danny, how are you making out with that crazy email?
Not well. It's really weird, though, that she would get this mad again. My wife, we had this happen before, recently. I came home from somewhere on the road, and Gretchen hit me in the head with a stack of papers, and we've been having a difficult time. And she had said to me once...
Hold on, were you up on the furniture? Because my wife will do that with me. She'll hit me the rolled-up newspaper once
no.
She sees me getting on the sofa.
I thought it was a divorce document, because she said to me once, I'll just file while you're gone, and you'll just be getting a divorce. So she whacks me in the head with this thick stack of papers. And I went, oh, my God, she's filed. And I'm trying to talk her out of leaving me. I don't want her much like today, and don't want her to leave me, blah, 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 blah. So finally, I start to read what the papers are, and they're not divorce papers. They're love letters from this girl telling me about since that first night we met in the Persian restaurant, she's thought nothing of me and the way we hugged and kissed goodnight.
She's thought nothing but of you.
Yes.
I mean, she's been obsessed with you at the Persian
restaurant.
Then
I keep reading and I keep reading.
Good name for TSV, by the way, the Persian restaurant.
The couscous is excellent.
Al fresco.
I'm thinking, damn, I flirted with some girl at a bar and she went nuts because this is, you know, if you're a skulking guy, you don't skulk and hug in the middle of a bar. I know this is inaccurate, you know, but I'm not the perfect guy. I may certainly have flirted with some girl and she turned out to be a nut. But then I keep reading and all of a sudden I start noticing, hey, I am answering.
Ah.
And there's letters back from me about our special relationship together. But to be honest with you, I had a little bit to drink that night, and I don't really remember too much of our relationship. It's obviously been a while. And I'm thinking,
that's what it says in the answer.
Yeah, in my reply.
Right.
So I'm thinking, I write better than this.
Mm-mm.
But she responds and starts telling us about our romance and our love life together. And I realize early on, it's a nut. And it's not only a nut, it's a nut I've never met. It's not a nut I flirted with and she took too far.
Mm-hmm.
It's just some person in fantasy world, which will happen to you.
Right.
So I'm trying to explain this to Gretchen. And I go, and these responses, who's that? And she says, that's me. So Gretchen is now writing love letters back to this girl, trying to trap me.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, if she's trying to help you get laid and just acting as your secretary, that's one thing. But if she's trying to trap you...
I will never... You're never going to get me. Even mad. I may say mean things to her, but even mad. I did all the bad stuff in this relationship. She had every right to be suspicious. This was just odd that she didn't just go, what are you doing? Who's this girl?
Mm-hmm.
So finally... I say, well, I'll tell you what. I'll just... I realize I've got the golden ticket. I get to the last letter. Her phone number's on it.
Mm-hmm.
I say, I'll just call this girl, get on the other line. We'll put a stop to this right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Gretchen says, no, I've talked to her or written her. Whatever. I'm not sure I remember correctly. It's a long time ago. I will... She's been traumatized enough. Leave her alone. And I put down the letter and I start to walk away. And I went... Wait a minute. No, I'm not going to leave this poor traumatized. I mean, she's obviously crazy. I'll give you that. And I'm not. There's a humorous side of it enough that is keeping me fairly calm rather than screaming, how could you do this? Which normally would be my pattern. Are you out of your mind? Blah, blah. It's crazy enough that I see the humor in it. And then I noticed the phone number, and she won't let me call. And I said, Shinet, you call her. She said, why? And I said, because you've been married to me for that year 15 years.
Well,
she'll make a mistake within a second about my height, about my manners, about something. You know me so well. Within 5 minutes, you're going to know this person never met me.
Why wouldn't Gretchen want to call the person?
I believe she's wanted out for a long time. I told her.
So this is a way of just thinking you've cheated, knowing that if she verified it, you wouldn't have cheated, but wanting to check the box where you cheated right. So she could have more fuel for her divorce fire.
I did cheat once.
Yeah, I know, but in this particular instance, you didn't.
It's relatively recent, and no, of course not, and it's with a nut job, and she's got us out dancing in public places.
Right.
You know, there's no reason. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm with you on that. There's no reason for Gretchen not to call me. So I just said, I have rights here. I'm calling this person no matter what you say, and I put her on speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hi, this is Danny Bonaducci. And before I can get to, I'm going to do the same thing that Gretchen did. I'm going to say, you know, I'm just a little vague on our relationship. And here are our first words. I am so sorry. I thought it was you. Everybody at the bar said it was you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So some guy that either looked like me enough to get through one night, or I don't know, because I didn't send it. The second she said she admitted she never met me before, I was done. And Gretchen said she was sorry. Well, this letter, and we'll probably have to take a break before I can get to it, is outlandish. Let me give you just the first couple of lines. And I don't want to read what Gretchen wrote, because that's her personal business, and it also mentions a very nice kid that I know. But listen to this.
This is a different woman.
But this is dated 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So now Gretchen is retroactively cheating with a psycho poet. Listen to this. Body of a killer. Heart of a poet. You're my hero, and you don't even know it. Then she Gretchen says something. My love's my new cocaine. You make me high. Take away my pain. And then Gretchen writes something about
this
me.
This email is to Gretchen.
I don't know. I think it's to me.
It's to you.
And it's from 2 years ago. It's dated 12/22/05.
And you never saw it.
Not that I remember. I mean, I get tons of crazy mail.
Right.
But I think this has got to be to my home personal email, would be my guess. Or when I did get in trouble writing on MySpace years ago, but I don't think so. I don't recognize this, because first of all, no one would talk to me this way without knowing they were going to get laughed at.
Well, but let me just reset so everyone, including me, can get on the right page and calibrate it here. This is the first you've seen of this.
This is sent to me from Gretchen, and it starts with,
hold on. Okay. It's 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You've never seen it.
Mm-hmm. Not that I remember.
Today.
Not that I'm aware of.
And
no.
Sent to you from Gretchen is just one more reason why.
Yes.
You too.
Then it goes to she won't be coming to the funeral. She won't be coming to any of the fights.
She meaning Gretchen.
Yes. I will not be eulogizing your funeral. There is nothing I can say.
We'll have to bring the fight to her, by the way. She's not going to be coming to the fight.
No, you know what? I was a bad guy. She should know quality when she sees it and knows I would never go out with anyone and say, the body of a killer, the heart of a poet. You are my hero and you don't even know
me
it.
Me neither. Unless she was good looking. You
know, unless she was good looking at 9 years old.
Well,
you're my hero and you don't even know it?
I go up to 11.
And then I go, let's see. My love is, I hope you know my love is true.
Another pizza pocket, baby.
All I want in the world is you.
For tease me.
You don't know the power you yield. How my broken heart is healed.
Yes.
And then I get Gretchen writes, you get the gist of this. And once again, what are you, some kind of nut?
All right. So Gretchen, here's what Gretchen
is
doing.
But then ends with a current name of a person I actually know, a really sweet kid that nothing is going on.
She's been holding on to this awful poem for several years.
I guess. I don't know how it came out. I don't know. I haven't spoken to her.
But here's what
I'm trying to call her over and over
right
now.
It doesn't take a guy with a doctorate in psychology to figure this one out. Gretchen is grown out of love with you.
Right.
And it's tough to break up with somebody. It's tough on both sides of the aisle, which is the guy who's being broken up with who's done nothing to instigate the current breakup.
Right.
You didn't cheat. There's nothing to apologize for.
There's nothing to apologize for.
But it's also tough on the person that is saying, I'm breaking up with you, and it's not over anything. specifically. So what she is doing is probably trying to stay strong and stay motivated by feeding herself a steady diet of these things that she's hung on to. It's like she's going to be in the wilderness without a supermarket anywhere close for the next week, and she's packed some emails from a few years ago to keep her strength up as she goes through this very dangerous journey or this difficult journey.
Do you think she's... I don't think she's that devious. I think she came across this, checking old mail, doing stuff, because we switched our MySpace accounts, and she gets hers and I get mine now. Mm-hmm. And we got a little fight. I don't know why she'd either have this. She's not organized enough to have this for 2 years.
The point is, no, I don't.
This really came 2 years ago, and she wasn't mad and checked old emails somehow, and there this was.
Well,
she's not devious enough or knows how to use a computer well enough to
dig this up. I don't mean she's been packing for 2 years, but somewhere in her mind's, in that part of the knapsack in the back of your mind, this thing got tucked away a couple of years ago, and it got filed. Like when you're filing something that you don't think you're going to look at for a while, but you still file it away. This is filed under strikes against Danny. And now she's showing it to you because she's trying to ease her burden.
Oh, listen to this part. Because we went on all the TV shows to, you know, because why would we do it? We went on because I wanted to make sure people knew there was no incident, no other woman, no drugs, no nothing. Mm-hmm. And Gretchen has gone on several shows saying we're the best of friends, which we are, and I'm sure will be again. She's going to calm down. Mm-hmm. I'm sure she got hit in the face with this and went, how dare you? Oh, my God. And then she's going to look at it again today and go, oh, maybe this is just another nut job. Because I wrote back, call this person back. You have an email address. Mm-hmm. Find out who they are.
Right.
Write back.
Right. So now you've called Gretchen, but she's not answered the phone.
She won't answer the phone. It says, stop calling. She wrote me back. Just stop calling me. It says, I don't want you to come to the Prism Awards. That's when we went last year. I will not be coming to any of your fights. I will not be eulogizing you at the funeral. There's nothing I can say. I don't even know you. You're such a creepy liar. How do you sleep at night? Really, that's the real question. I can't get away from you fast enough. And just so you know, I won't be going on TV to defend you ever again, because I cannot lie and say there was nobody else, as now I have evidence to the contrary, mm-hmm. even though this is 2 years old.
And it's hardly evidence. But like I said, she, you know, look, let's put it this way.
This person doesn't ever say we've met, by the way. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, but you know what this is? You know what this is? When a fighter, before he gets in the ring and they interview him, they're like, well, how do you feel about your opponent? He disrespected me. He disrespected my family.
Right.
And now I'm going to... They're motivating themselves for
exactly.
a fight.
You have to dehumanize the enemy.
So, yes.
Is that what she's doing? Or
that's
she
what
just
she's
get
doing.
Hit in the face with this and has hurt her feelings? Or because I did, in fact, cheat. I didn't cheat with an illiterate bad poet. I'll tell you that right now. But, I, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I did, in fact, cheat. So she's got some evidence that I can be compelled to
cheat. Are you willing
to
talk about that situation 5 or 6 years ago? Or is that private?
Nothing's private, but I'm not willing to compromise the woman, you know, which she...
Right, right. Obviously, you wouldn't want to use her name, but it sounds as though this...
The saddest part about this is that she combines two things.
Right.
She says this is written by a person named Susie, who happens to be the current name of a person I know and is a very nice kid. The person who sent me the flower saying happy anniversary, which, by the way, I didn't get. It said happy anniversary. I hope this puts a smile on your mug. Did you notice it was in a beer mug?
Yeah.
I didn't get it till she said it.
Anniversary, 1 year anniversary.
Of sobriety.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
This is a nice way we spent it at my house.
Nice.
So I went out and I came home and I was locked out of the house, but I still had my apartment. It was mine, but you can lock it. It's a separate unit, but the electricity had gone out down there. So not only was it dark, it's freezing. I use space heaters. Mm-hmm. I'm not really living quite the Austin Powers Man of Mystery lifestyle down there, but it's a nice apartment. But with no electricity, it's freezing. So I just went and spent the night at a $68 motel. I parked my car at Jumbo's Clown Room. Well, that's where it was. It's the end of that street.
Good name for Tease Me.
So I wake up today to this.
Well, Danny, I don't want to...
It says right here, this is the scary part for me, because I told her in anger, this can get either really nice, we split stuff 50-50, and we've said it on TV 100 times. We've got documents that won't hold up in court, but I think everything's still going to be fine. We'll just split it 50-50, and that'll be that. Nobody wants to give all the money to the lawyers, and she's a smart enough girl. But it ends with this.
Well, why don't we take a 5-minute break?
Yes.
I guess the lawyers were right. It all starts off nice, but... But I didn't add what a sick, disgusting human being you are.
This is Gretchen.
Well, of course you did. Of course you added that. You just didn't add this extra part.
Right. Well, I...
So, by the way, yes. If you're the chick that wrote this from 2005, you obviously, I'm guessing it went to my home address. If you could write back and explain yourself, because you're going to give me a lot of trouble, that I mostly just don't want from 6 to 10.
I think she's busy accepting her Pulitzer in poetry.
Can you believe that? The heart of a hero and you don't even know it or some such thing?
We need to take a break, but the...
I'm doing everything I can to get her on the phone, whether she'll talk to us or not. I don't want her believing this is happening. I'd love her to talk to us, but at least I'd like her to talk to me. So she can go, all right, I got real mad real fast.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I'm not going to keep my finger. I will keep my fingers crossed, but I'm not going to hold out much hope because I think we tried to get her on the phone yesterday or the day before.
She actually called back. She said the kids were in the car all doing. We moved on.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that conversation. Did we have that conversation?
No.
Oh, okay. So
she called, me back on my cell phone and said I just didn't want to discuss it in the car.
So there is a chance we may speak to her?
I don't know. I mean, she knows our phone number. I'm going to dial her right now. And I know she's up because it says stop writing me. But Gretchen's a very strong woman. She is not.
Hold on. My wife's been up for a half hour, but she doesn't listen to the show.
Gretchen listens to the show when we're friends every day. And then helps me out with where I went right, where I went wrong. Gretchen's been wonderful. I don't want her to, A, believe this, which by the light of day, she won't. She'll give this little thought and go, okay, this is just a crazy person.
Okay.
But I don't want her feelings to be hurt, and I certainly don't want her to think that I would date anybody that writes like Dr. Seuss.
Psychotic, Dr. Seuss.
I have certain rules.
Hey, Adam. Yeah. It's good to be here. I'd like to take you out for an imported beer.
Yes.
And your heart is my new cocaine.
Yeah, that's
implies
bad.
That she had old cocaine, which would not have been a smart way to talk to me 2 years ago.
We need to take ourselves a break. Well, if we can get Gretchen on the phone, we'll put a fork in this baby, and if not, we'll just move on to the news. T?
Yeah, we'll talk about some of the videos that came out yesterday from Sung-hui Cho describing why he wanted to massacre all those people at Virginia Tech. And also, last night on American Idol, Simon had to apologize for rolling his eyes. I will play his apology for you and a historical elimination.
Mm. Yeah.
I had one of those.
I'll roll my R's every once in a while, but my eyes never. We'll take a quick break. Back with the news next. Adam Carolla Show.
Here's what's coming up this morning on the Adam Carolla Show with program director Jack Silver.
Oh, yes. Hello, sir. I'm trying to track down a Balky or Cousin Larry. Never heard of them? They're roommates. Always getting into wacky adventures and awkward hijinks. Ring a bell. Oh, hey, what up, peeps? Jack fan still trying to win that $10,000 for booking this month's biggest guest. Today we got Comedy Central's Roastmaster General Jeffrey Ross. And the return of Dick Gobbler in the Morning Zoo. Finally, we get to hear a real morning show on this station. Bye.
Thanks, Jack. Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci. Call 866-901-ADAM. It's the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, it's my show. Any reply from Gretchen, by the way?
Yes. Do you think when it says you may not read it on the air, which I got, of course, after I just read it on the air. That's nice. She meant that letter. I can't read that.
Right.
Okay. We're pretty clear on that because I don't want to go on. It says, just stop yourself, Danny. I found this poem in your lockbox with your coins. Don't even try. A lot.
Good name for TV.
You have such a convenient lie for everything. Face it, you were up to something with someone named Amy. I used their name, bummer.
Susie.
I don't care. It doesn't matter. This person doesn't exist.
Amy.
Face it, you're a liar. Hey, why don't you just be a man and just admit that for once in your life? Have I ever not admitted, by the way?
That you're a liar?
That I cheated and I was a scummy guy? Have I ever not said that? Hang on.
All right, so she's not going to talk on the air.
Okay, I'm sick of all your lies.
Maybe if you called her, because I think she really thinks she's got some in the air. So why don't you be a man and admit for once in your life that you were unfaithful again and you know it. Now, here's what I wrote back, since this is years ago. There's no lock on the lock box.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Of any kind. Mm-hmm. So I wrote back, because we have both done this before. This may sound odd to the regular Joe, but Gretchen and I have both had to do this in our past. Maybe you guys have too. I don't know. That note, maybe I got it and I just don't remember it because it's in my box, but it's also her box, scared me. maybe she's somebody nutsy cuckoo. So I wrote just back, hey, maybe I was just keeping that as evidence of some kind of nut.
Right.
You know, so I can prove, hey, there's a nut if something happens.
Well, is that what you would do?
Yeah, we keep stuff from, yeah, we do. We archive stuff from nut jobs that we want to prove later. Like, Gretchen personally had me go retrieve letters from a real person once that I admitted to being with. So she said, you go to that person's house and you get any correspondence between you and her back.
Wow. I'm just...
Gretchen does not fool around.
It's a full-time job being Mrs. Bonaducci.
Apparently.
Hey, you burn some calories being married to Danny.
You got to retrieve letters
but
from girls' houses.
Anything.
And you got a lockbox and you got my...
There's no lockbox. She has it. I don't have it and there's no key to it.
For the record, though, you're saying that you cheated with this one woman 5 or 6 years ago and that is that.
That
right.
is that.
All right. And we're not going to be able to talk to Gretchen.
Well, Adam, this is radio.
I'm just going to go with no at a certain point, and we'll move on with the show.
Right.
Yes?
I say yes. If you're going to try to dial it, you can.
All right. I'm going to dial her number.
Please try your call again later.
I think she'll talk to you, Adam.
I think she might talk to you, Adam.
All right.
Yes, but I don't know that she's really strong. I don't know All that right, she I is even listening.
I don't even know how to dial the phone. Let's see. Seven, right? Then I can just dial the number. Now, did you do the one before the...
Yep.
But we're in the same area code, aren't we?
Yeah, you still got to do the one.
Okay, the one and then the seven numbers.
By the way, no, this kid I know number. Named Amy, as long as we're discussing it, because she compares them, they might be the first person, the same person
right.
who I just met. I met her mom last night. This is a kid, you know?
Is this a kid you're dating?
No. This is the kid from your dad paid the ticket, paid for the meal.
Ah.
And then I went, well, that's really weird, but this seemed really nice, and we were hanging out, and there's not a lot of chemistry or anything, and I do like the company of girls, and it seems the safest. The girl's your kid, there's not a lot of chemistry, she couldn't be sweeter, brings me the flowers on my anniversary, had dinner with her mom, yeah, I like her. But she wants to meet Gretchen. She wants to be pals. I said, you know, Gretchen was nervous about this. She said, well, couldn't I meet her? We could be friends. I'm thinking, yes.
I don't think Gretchen's going to pick up.
Hmm.
You want to leave our message, Adam?
Yes.
This will be good.
I don't even want to talk to my own wife.
Hello, you have reached the Bonaduccis. Please leave your name and number.
I've got to change that app going
one. As soon as we can. Thank you. Adam's on the phone.
All right, Gretchen. The only reason I called is it okay if we put your voicemail on the air, by the way? Adam Carolla calling from 97.1. The reason I called is because it would seem like bad radio if we didn't.
Right.
And later on, when Kimmel's yelling at me, I'm going to have to say, well, I called.
Gretchen, I'm very sorry if we're harassing you. I know you probably have kids to drop off and a day to do and such. But we thought maybe we could talk to you. We're sorry.
As a girl, though, what are your instincts about that letter to me?
Can we hang up on Gretchen? Then
no,
I'll tell you.
Gretchen.
I think I did something?
I got a last mission for you, Gretchen. I want you to swing by my house and do a little scared straight on my wife. Why don't you bring that lockbox with you and see if you can snap her back into reality.
Explain to her
what it's like on the outside.
None of this is Gretchen's fault.
Have we hung up on Gretchen? I just did.
She could be forced to. I wish you would think I would cheat with a better class of poet, but none of this is her fault. I did what I did when I did it, but not since, and certainly not with that person. And it's certainly, I mean, I'm sure this would be bad for him, but I'd bring that kid Amy up to my house in 2 seconds. Say, honey, this is that Amy girl I've been telling you about. She's very.
I think that once you've been betrayed in an extreme way, as I assume is the case here, 5 years ago, then everything picks the scab off of that wound.
Right, but I mean, when she did the thing with the hit me in the head with the paper, and it turned out I've never even seen that human being. You might want to give me a little benefit of the doubt on this one. You might want to at least hear my side, which I don't really have because I don't remember
anything.
You
haven't really earned the benefit of the doubt.
I have. When she whacked me in the head with the papers and screamed at me for having an affair in a Persian restaurant, and then we called the girl and she admitted she never met me, I did get, some girls claim to know you who don't.
Well, how long did this affair go on 5 years ago?
A few months.
Hey, Ken?
Yeah?
How say you, my brother?
What's that?
How say you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing well. Now the part where you called the show because you wanted to say...
Tell Danny to move on.
Move on.
He's trying.
In what sense? In what sense move on, man?
Hey, Danny, I love the show, man. Adam T, you guys are awesome.
Thank
very
you.
Intelligent, very awesome show. But man, when it comes to, I've been with the same woman for 14 years, and when it comes to the mending of the heart, we just gotta kind of take it in a personal manner and move on, or else it starts sounding like high school. I mean, the letter, this, that, the notes, she won't talk to me. Come on.
Well, I am happy when it is in no way, shape, or form entertaining to move along. I just don't feel the right to have trashed others the way I have and then keep a bunch of secrets.
No, yeah, I totally agree. But
I mean, this is the radio show where I have bashed Anna Nicole Smith before her body was cold. I've called Paris Hilton Patient Zero and Typhoid Mary. I have no right to keep my own secrets from you and still be the same guy and get paid the same money. Yeah, I'd be a hypocrite and a liar, and I apparently only do that to my wife.
I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that it's actually very interesting to hear what goes on in Danny's world.
Oh, it definitely is. No, don't get me wrong.
Radio, bad cartoon.
Danny's world.
Gretchen, you're listening. Gretchen, if you're still, if you're listening, baby, before you head over to the Corolla house to pop your eyeball out and throw it at my wife, why don't you grab some of the size 3 women's bedazzled jeans and bring those with you as well as Exhibit B. It is my...
It would be Exhibit B because a size 0 drips off my wife and I wear a 7.
I'm talking about your jeans when I said 3.
Oh, thanks, honey. That's very sweet.
That's right. I just think there's real money to be made in a sort of a tour, a relative, we put things into perspective tour. Right. You know what I mean?
What about a clothing line? Bedazzle Betrayer.
Ah. Write it down. T.
Yes.
Not sure where we're doing on time now.
Should we take a break?
Perhaps you should tease the news one more time, and then we'll come back with that.
Yes. Well, as I said before, historic elimination last night on American Idol. We will get to that. Mm. And also, what is the least fulfilling career on Earth? Something, Adam, you may or may not have done before.
Dawson was in the middle of a historic elimination.
Who's about crazy skulls?
This time yesterday when I walked in the gentleman's head. Anyway... You can always tell it's Dawson because it smells like patchouli and you see Vans hanging out from underneath the stall. As far as I know, he's the only guy in his 30s who's still rocking the Vans. We'll take a break. We'll be back, I promise, with the news next on the Adam Carolla Show.
This month on the Adam Carolla Show, your chance to win $10,000. Outbook August in April.
You know, there's that weird guy in the office. That's Mike August.
Mike August books our talent.
Except for he's been banned from the building.
You book a celebrity on the Adam Carolla Show.
Dig deep into that Rolodex.
Favorites are Kobe Bryant.
I was the first guard to go straight from high school to the NBA.
Nice, because you got started when you were 11.
Senator John Kerry.
Good to talk to you, sir.
Glad to be with all of you. How you doing?
Does everyone tell you? You look like the mascot from the Patriots.
Ray Liotta.
For once, I'm not the guy going around choking people somebody else is.
And Jamie Foxx.
I'm going to make it do what it do.
Who's going to win? You got to listen to find out.
Either way, I will part with $10,000 at the end of this month.
Outbook August in April on the Adam Carolla Show.
Yep, and still time to win $500 for the winner of this week. There'll be a winner of each week and then a winner of the grand prize at the end. So if you want to win this week, the bar's fairly low, right? What do we got this week? Yeah, you could win this week.
Yeah.
You could win this week with a B-lister.
Well, we love Monique.
Well, then I
she's great, but she's
myself.
Beatable. Yes?
Yes. By everyone who works at United Airlines. Oh, you mean we could beat her in the...
Yes.
In the, oh, I see.
Yes.
That's right. Yes. Yes. All right, where were we? T.
Yes.
The news.
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter on this station right now.
23-year-old Sung-hui Cho, the killer in the Virginia Tech massacre, mailed...
I thought his first name was Cho.
I believe that is his last name.
Ah.
Yes. People have been transposing the first and last names because they're confused by Korean names, but right. I believe Cho is his last name and Sung-hee is his first
Christ.
Name.
Christ. I mean, everyone can say Cho instead of Sung-hee and not screw that part up.
Absolutely. So Cho, the killer in the Virginia Tech massacre, had mailed videotaped messages to NBC News at 9 a.m. on Monday morning. That timestamp means that he mailed it between shooting two people at the dorm and massacring another 30 at the Norris Hall Academic Building. Here is some audio from the videotaped messages made by Cho.
Do you know what it feels like to be spit on your face and have trash shoved down your throat? Do you know what it feels like to dig your own grave? Do you know what it feels like to have your throat slashed from ear to ear? Do you know what it feels like to be torched alive? Do you know what it feels like to be humiliated and be impaled upon on a cross and left to bleed to death for your amusement? You have never felt a single ounce of pain your whole life. Did you want to inject as much misery in our lives as you can, just because you can? You had everything you wanted. Your Mercedes wasn't enough, you brats. Your golden necklaces weren't enough, you snobs. Your trust fund wasn't enough. Your vodka and cognac weren't enough. All your debaucheries weren't enough. Those weren't enough to fulfill your hedonistic needs. You had everything.
Yeah.
Wow. There's a disgruntled guy with a bad speaking voice.
Well, he was quite likely schizophrenic or suffered another diagnosable mental illness.
He shot like 33 people. I'm confident there was something wrong with him.
Yes.
And yeah. Maybe it's a hunch. Call it a hunch.
And again, I can't get any kind of timeline from the news. If you heard me railing yesterday, it sounded like I was railing against the cops. I might be railing against the cops if I could get a goddamn timeline from the news. That little thing where they show the map of the canvas and they go, he shot these people at 7:21 in the morning, and at 9:11 he dropped off this letter to the post office, but by 9:24 he'd entered the building, and by 9:26 he'd shot his first whatever. Let's cobble that together, could we, people?
Yes,
enough with the grieving folks, enough with the emails from the alumni, enough with the tapes of the madman. I want some answers. I want to know what went down, where the cops were, how long they stood outside the building, what happened. I want a timeline. Come on, newsies, what's going on? I keep watching and I keep thinking I must be missing this. Maybe there's something I'm missing. Maybe there's something someone else is seeing. Has anyone seen any facet of this story that involved what happened? Not what happened after it happened. We have what happened before it happened.
Right.
He was very disgruntled. Then we have what happened after it happened. Oh, she was 19. Oh, she had her whole future ahead of her. What about the part where it happened?
Here's what's unclear. Between 9:01 or 9 when he sent this tape to NBC, and then between about 9:45 when the students started calling 911 because there was a shooting. But that 45 minutes, I think police still haven't pieced together what happened, or they haven't released it to the news media.
I think they haven't gotten their story together. Uh-huh. And I think the news media is being very respectful because, as I said, ever since 9/11, everyone who puts on a uniform is a hero.
Right.
And everyone wants to mourn. And then everyone wants to break down the game film of what was going on in this guy's life before he decided to go on a rampage. But no one wants to scrutinize, criticize, or take a look at what the law enforcement personnel did or didn't do during these very crucial moments. And as someone who wants to watch the news, I've had an arse full of everything else. Right. I want to now see what the F went on over there, and I'm not getting it anywhere.
Well, a little something more about Cho. Now, at Virginia Tech, like at any university, you are often assigned a roommate or a suite mate. The roommate is obviously in a room with you. The suite mate is in an adjoining room. And so somebody was randomly assigned Cho to be their suite mate.
I've had worse roommates. I just want to go on the record. So.
The guy that drinks the last beer.
I had a roommate.
I mean, shooting people is one thing, but no alcohol in your dorm?
Yeah.
I had a roommate. I was upset because she put up a Garfield poster, and I was afraid people would think it was mine. This is far worse.
Plus, Garfield was very anti-Semitic.
Obviously.
And please, anyone who doesn't agree with that is just being naive.
He loved lasagna. He hated the Jews.
That's right.
Karan Grewal was his suite mate, and here is what he had to say about living with Cho.
I never saw him stalking anybody or, you know, even suspecting that he was stalking anybody the entire year. We were never told by anybody. Obviously, he never talked to us. We were never told by university officials or anybody that our suite mate had a problem about aggression or suicidal thoughts or anything like that.
Might have been nice to have given this suite mate the heads up that their roommate had had a temporary detention order enacted against him for stalking and harassing two female students.
I know, but now it's like, you know, I think about all this stuff. It's like all the people that rail against the Patriot Act are the same people that are saying, hey, this guy should have been singled out. People
right.
should have been aware of. It's the same group. It's the same group. Well, what do we do? I mean, how many sides of your mouth can you speak out of? And it seems like every campus across the country has 50 of these guys.
Yeah.
And then what do you do? I worked with a guy who when he was walking up some stairs past a secretary, a very heavy set, very unattractive secretary, by the way. I think he was trying to make her feel good. And he said, "Hey, looking good today, ha-cha-cha." And he walked right past her and walked to our office. Now, this guy had no interest in this secretary. Right. And she then ratted him out to our bosses, and he got called in for a conversation. And under our new set of rules, he would then go on a list.
Right.
And then people would have to be notified. Now, is that fair to him? But wait a minute. There's a history of him having inappropriate contact with female coworkers. Such a slippery slope. I know I always talk about it. I don't know what the answer is. And I think the answer is once in a while, somebody snaps and maybe there's nothing to do about it.
There may have been no way to predict that this creepy student would have snapped in this way, or there may have been a way to predict it.
Well,
looking back, it seems obvious.
Let me chime in with this. We're sitting around, we're blaming counselors, we're talking to roommates, we want to know what happened with the authorities, this person was talked to, how about these mental health professionals? I have a novel idea. How about this guy's goddamn parents? See, I heard somebody on the news yesterday saying, and you want to know who else the victim is? His parents.
I
his
family.
His family's a victim,
yeah.
too. Family's a victim, too? All right. I said yesterday, if you beat the crap out of your kid or you sexually molested him and he goes on a killing spree, then that is either second degree murder or manslaughter for you. That's the world I want to live in, because you created this monster, this dog that you beat that jumped over the fence of your yard and terrorized the neighborhood. I want you held liable for that. But forget about that. Forget about the part where they abused him or they did anything negative to him. How about just the relationship you have with your son? You don't know that your son is despondent. You don't know that your son is introverted. You don't know that your son is going through a mental anguish. Your son. Forget about the counselors. Forget about the teachers. Forget about the professionals who, by the way, have 1,000 sons they have to deal with on their docket every day and who get paid $30,000 a year and don't care nearly as much as you should care. How about we blame the parents for not looking into why their son was carving 666 into his mashed potatoes when he came over for Thanksgiving?
Right.
Huh?
Have you ever
But
seen
you wake up and notice what the F is going on in your own backyard. I want the parents held responsible for that. Not victims. Are you kidding? They're anything but victims. Nature or nurture. This little demon seed came out of them. And I know they're going through a lot of anguish right now, but maybe somebody should point the finger at them instead of the people who are getting paid less than nothing to work on an entire campus full of people they're not related to.
I would say maybe that's true. Maybe that's you. First of all, at Thanksgiving, if you're sitting across from him, he's carving 999, and now you have less to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If you're carving 666 at your plate, Brian seeing me carve 999, why would he be afraid?
It's inverted.
Right. They're confused.
So they're confused
Hold on,
right
Danny.
Off the bat.
That's a very salient point.
Thank
it
you.
Really
write
is.
That down.
Thank you.
You should work as an FBI profile. Yes, all I'm saying is I don't feel sorry for the parents, and I don't, and those of you who claim them amongst the victims.
The parents of Cho.
The parents of Cho. Look, the idea is to learn something from these tragic events, not all run around with our heads cut off like chickens. This, what could we have done? The roommates, the counselors, the cops, the teachers, really nothing. Let's be honest. There's nothing we could have done. Could we have locked down the campus? I don't know how you lock down a place that has no fences. I don't know what it would have done. I'm assuming he would have shot people out in the parking lot.
Yep.
I don't know what we could have learned, but I'll tell you one thing we could be discussing. We could be discussing the environment that created this monster, the petri dish that this guy was hatched from. We could discuss that. Instead, we want to look at emails from a grieving alumni from Virginia Tech. Come on, news people. Why don't you get off your ass and focus on the one thing that may prevent this next time? Because the counselors ain't going to be able to prevent it. The parents may have gotten hold of this kid when he was 13 and said, perhaps we should talk to some counselors.
Perhaps. And basically, I agree with you because statistics back you up that 80 or 90% of all convicts were abused in some way as children. Mm-hmm. But in this specific case, I think we're premature to point any fingers across an entire ocean to Seoul, South Korea, and wonder what. I think it's fair to wonder.
The family's actually here.
Oh, they all moved here?
Yeah.
I mean, they live in the same town.
It wasn't Dahmer's mother, a psychologist.
I was just going to say, have you ever seen an interview with Richard Dahmer's father? He seems very normal.
Richard Dahmer?
What's his name? Jeffrey Dahmer.
Ross Dahmer's going to be in here next.
Jeffrey Dahmer's father, and you never know what goes on behind closed doors, but he seems like a normal guy, and
so's the mom.
Their family seem normal. I mean, perhaps there's
they may be the exception to Adam's rule, but until I know better, when a guy just killed 33 people, I'm not willing to yet assume that 80% of convicts that were abused includes this kid until I know something. I'm not just going to say, why did you breed a monster to these people that might have done their best?
I will give you the fact that people snap and there's no control over it. Maybe like there's no control over your kid getting diabetes or cancer, leukemia or whatever. But this kid was despondent. This kid had characteristics that would suggest that he was probably going to try to kill himself, if not others. As a parent, when your kid is suffering, when your kid is having social anxieties, when your kid is wearing sunglasses at the dinner table and his cap is pulled over his face,
no hoodie.
Well, then it's time to jump in on his behalf. Forget about his schoolmates who are going to get shot in a few short years. On his behalf, they didn't see the warning signs, and the warning signs were there because everyone saw them. And don't tell me this guy was Mr. Sunshine when he showed up back to his parents' house, which, by the way, was in the same town. Evidently, they had a dry cleaning business in the same town the college was in. They should have woken up. That is part of your job as a parent. Feed your kid, clothe your kid, educate your kid, but also be educated about your kid. Right. See what your kid's going through. You see, your kid is clinically depressed.
Right.
You got to pick up on what he's putting down.
Yeah, perhaps they could have pulled him out of school.
Yes, hold on. Lee agrees with me. Lee?
Hey, Adam, I just wanted to say thanks, man. You're the first guy to hit this thing on the head that I've heard so far. Instead of blaming, like, the administration, the cops, the mental health profession, I mean, it does start and stop with the parents. I agree with you. Danny, I love you, but now's not the time for your levity, and thanks a lot.
All right.
I said don't blame the parents till you know them.
What do you think was a 999? But what if you combine the two with levity?
Every moment is the time for my levity, mister.
I like that. All right.
Okay,
what else?
See what time it is right now.
What time is it, Danny?
Time for my levity, damn it.
Tell Danny to move on.
Okay. I'm
looking at a timeline now.
Right.
That Mike got off the BBC News, internet, whatever. Shooting starts at Norris Hall at 9:15. Okay. And then it says police called to Norris Hall shootings 9:45.
Right. Yeah. That's when 911.
The shooting a half hour later?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait a second.
That is when police were called to the scene at 9:45. That's based on the timelines I've seen as well.
Now, arrived at the scene?
That's what's confusing. Did the calls come in or did they arrive? I don't know.
They received the call according to this document.
I feel like even Big Tad would have put that call in at 9:30. I mean, wait a minute. The shooting starts in a crowded class hall at 9:15 and a half hour later somebody picks up the cell phone?
This is based on Mike's timeline.
Okay, this is mathematically impossible.
It doesn't sound right.
And even if police arrived a half hour later, that's not right.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
So this timeline is effed up royally. I mean, come on.
It doesn't seem to make sense.
And by the way, you think a half hour is long when you're watching According to Jim? You want to know how long a half hour is when someone is shooting up your place of work or your school?
Jim Belushi would make a bad joke.
You wish he'd start singing. I mean, the point is, if you're sitting for a half hour, it's like 9 hours when people are shooting. Everyone has a cell phone on them on campus. Shooting starts, the cell phone call goes in 45 seconds, not 45 minutes, right?
I believe that much more will be revealed on this case that we do not yet know. And it's almost not even worth it to speculate because we just don't have the information yet.
All right.
Lots of people are speculating.
Are victims too.
Well,
Jesus, I hate the pussy.
You know, they haven't been trotted out in front of the media. I have not seen the parents. I believe he has a sister.
They don't have a choice about being trotted out, but they should at least be brought out. Their name should be brought out. Their picture should be brought out. And there should be discussion and speculation. And instead of asking what went on in the mind of the killer, we should find out what went on at home and talk to people who have some expertise in that field.
Absolutely. Well, I would imagine that they would feel horribly guilty.
I imagine they feel horrible as well. But it's like, look. If I drive around, if I throw your kid in the back of my car and I don't buckle him in, I get in an accident, he gets ejected from the car and dies, I'm going to feel horrible. I feel horrible. But as far as the law goes, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel horrible, and you feel sorry for me because I feel horrible.
Right.
But as far as the law goes, I got your kid killed.
You're talking about parental negligence.
Your kid killed my kid.
Right.
We feel horrible. Now let's go talk to a judge.
Right.
I think that's fair, but then also, what do we do once they're exonerated, if they were to be exonerated, because you never get the kind of press on a retraction. Nobody's going to write what wonderful, if somebody speculates, like, it.
Well, they're screwed already.
Right.
I mean, their names will never be good again. Dan?
Luckily, Joe is like Smith in Korea. They'll be all right.
Right. Dan?
Yes, Adam.
Do you agree with Danny?
I do. You can't, unless you know something about them, you can't blame the parents. My son has some legal problems, and we did the best we could. And it was a condition that he had that we had nothing, we didn't know anything about.
Yes.
Now we're finding out later that he has this condition that kind of urged him or caused him to do this problem.
What?
You can't blame, without knowing, you can't blame the parents.
What?
I'm sorry.
What? Well, hold on a second. We can possibly blame
you
the parents.
Possibly,
if we try our best.
You don't know, though. You don't know anything.
I know what you're saying, Dan. If your child is mentally ill, that isn't your fault.
What did your child have? Or what does
he
have?
I'm not getting into that. I can't.
All right, then get the F off the air.
Can we get into...
If you call up and argue and say your son has a condition and then say, I don't want to get into it, then don't call.
Well, let's just say it's schizophrenia.
That's what it sounded like to me.
Look, I'm aware of this disease, and I know how it goes. Your thing is your son has schizophrenia. You notice he has schizophrenia. You get him on medication, and you take care of the problem.
Yes.
This guy was clinically depressed for what seemed like quite a long period of time. His parents weren't back in South Korea. They were living down the street.
Right.
They should have had some contact with him. I'm not saying they could have stopped it. I'm saying I want to see some evidence that they did. I want to hear from them that we saw he was depressed, we tried to get him some help, and he went AWOL. I want to know what their relationship was. I want to know that they got involved and tried. I'm not saying they are responsible. I'm saying they might be. And it's not black and white. Maybe they're 20% responsible. Maybe the counselors at school are 10%. Maybe the law enforcement is 15%. You see, this is a pie we can cut up in many slices.
Right, but a guy just called us this morning who listened to you and broke the law and got a ticket for it.
That's right.
You're a fine and lucid human being. You did what you thought was right, but you did, in fact, tell a guy to break the law. He did it and is now being punished.
I told him to look in his rear view before he turned left.
He did. He drives a van. He didn't tell him, don't do this if you don't drive a van. You didn't go out and give him all the evidence out.
Don't do it if you don't. Can't see what's behind you.
Okay, so basically, you can pass on whatever information you want. I still don't do it because I'm afraid of tickets. I haven't had one in a really long time. I don't want one. So unless I'm running late for work, I obey most of the traffic laws. I don't think that you can be swayed into killing 33 people by bad parenting, unless the parenting is so egregious. And if it were, I think you'd have heard, there'd be reports that we'd be getting on the news now that this kid was visited by the child services.
Can you be dissuaded, though? That's the thing.
You can be medicated.
But do you have a right to be dissuaded? Do you have a right to know everything about the parents' private lives because their son, who is an adult, committed a crime? If he is 16, they have legal rights that they have to explain themselves.
Well, let's put it this way. We can all agree that if a parent takes their kid into the basement and keeps them chained to a radiator and ritualistically tortures them, and then that kid gets out and kills your kid when he's 12 years old, we got a case against the parents, right?
Absolutely.
And we can all agree that if you're the world's most loving, most caring, nurturing parent and your kid snaps and kills somebody, there's nothing we can do to you. I mean, you did the best you could. To me, those are the two extremes.
Right.
Either way, there's a body. In one place, the parents are culpable. In another place, they're not. everything else is going to fall in between for me. I want to know what these guys did. It's clear that this guy was despondent, depressed, and let's just call it flat out weird for quite some time.
Right. Yeah.
I want to know that the parents noticed it and attempted to do something. Maybe they could have got him to... Here's the deal. Maybe they could have got him to a psychiatrist.
Right.
Maybe he could have got on medication.
Sure.
But they didn't. Maybe there was a cultural thing. Maybe in their culture... That was a sign of weakness.
Right, maybe
the reasons why they didn't do it. I'm sure they're thinking right now to some point 2 years ago when they thought, maybe we should have got this guy some help.
Right.
Maybe we should have seen the signs, but they didn't act. And not acting is, to me, the same as me not putting the seatbelt on your kid when he's in the back of my car. I never thought I'd get into an accident. Sure, they never thought he would do this. I was just going up the street. Sure. But your kid's dead.
Okay, what if you did put him in the seatbelt and he dies anyway? You've now done everything you could and you're
right.
Not culpable.
That's right.
Then you don't know that these guys didn't put him in his seatbelt.
I don't know that. I would like to hear something about it from the news.
I'm confident you will, but I will agree with Adam on one thing. The news is coming slowly.
Yes, I
know. There's got to be a reason for that.
Again, we always choose not to talk about the points that are behind this, the parenting, this, that, and again, I want my timeline in a half hour between the time he started shooting and when the 911 call went
wrong!
In. Seems more than wrong to me. All right, we got to take a break. I know we had more news to get to, but after all,
this is the news
of the day. Good news for you guys, though. Roast master Jeffrey Ross. Comedian Jeff Ross and dear, dear friend Jeff Ross in the studio next on The Adam Carolla Show.
Back to The Adam Carolla Show. Call 866-901-ADAM.
You having fun? We'll tell your face.
Jeffrey Ross is on The Adam Carolla Show.
King of the roast, Jeff Ross. And you may not appreciate it. You'll laugh if you watch him on Comedy Central, but you go sit there up on the dais and see this man dig into somebody for 40 minutes, and you realize...
They announced the next roast on Comedy Central.
Oh, really?
Who is it?
Yeah, I'll probably get in trouble for saying it, because I'm not supposed to know.
Ah, go ahead.
Flavor Flav!
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
Do you have anything already prepared?
I just found out last night. I'll probably make a lot of jokes about him.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, he's sort of an easy target, right?
Well, he is, although the thing I've learned from doing a handful of these roasts, too, is there's a lot of collateral damage. A lot of, hey, weren't we supposed to be roasting Pam Anderson? Because I've just heard the 55th Adam Carolla Jimmy Kimmel homo joke.
Right. I think even Sarah Silverman got some shrapnel in that
I know
one.
You're just sitting there and you're thinking, well, where's, you know, Pam Anderson has, we've decapitated her, but I've been stabbed with a sprinkler key repeatedly. Like, I'm getting the crap nailed out of me just by sitting. Everyone who gets up on the dais starts getting into it. It's sort of like when you're dad is screaming at your brother and then he gets eye contact with you because you're giggling and he starts yelling at you too. Jeff, we're going to, now Jeff, by the way, is going to be live at the Morongo Casino this Saturday with who? Oh, nobody, just Jim Florentine. You know him as a special ed and our own Danny Bonaducci, yes?
What a show.
Yeah, so you guys are going to be there. 9 o'clock is when the show begins this Saturday. Jeff, sit in. We're going to finish the news, chime in, and give your opinion, if you will.
I also want to talk about Danny's love life when we get a chance.
Oh, okay.
All right, we spoke yesterday about
Richard
Gere.
If we can coax him out of his shell. He doesn't like to talk about his personal life on the air. He's made it clear.
He's a private man.
But not only that, during the breaks, he runs out and calls somebody on his cell phone. Like, you don't stop.
I'm trying to get a hold of my wife.
Damage control is what they call it.
I'm trying really hard to get a hold of my wife and go, are you kidding with this?
Oh, jeez.
Richard Gere is also on damage control. He got in trouble in India. Because he kissed an Indian actress named Shilpa Shetty. He kissed her in public. It was during an AIDS awareness rally in New Delhi. And apparently...
Aware of AIDS over there?
Apparently not. In that culture, it's considered obscene because they kissed... he just kissed her on the cheek. But it was in public and people are very angry. And now 3 Indian lawyers have filed complaints against Richard Gere and Shilpa Shetty for this kiss during an AIDS rally. First, a little bit of there. We do have audio from the AIDS rally. This is Richard Gere and he's chanting in Hindi, no condom, no sex.
Condom nahi, condom nahi.
Sex nahi.
Sex nahi.
Condom nahi.
Condom nahi.
Sex nahi.
Sex nahi.
Thank you very much.
It's quite a speech. He was chanting it. I don't think anyone else sounded like they were chanting it.
They didn't join in.
Do you know how great to be? There's
a celebrity on the line in the Outbook August competition. Sir?
Hello, Mr. Corolla.
David Arquette.
Hey,
wow.
David. Hey, David.
How are you, guys?
Good to speak to you, David Arquette.
Speaking to you.
Who told you to call in?
Jimmy Kimmel.
Really?
I don't know that name.
I'd love you to write a check to Jimmy.
David, you're promoting The Tripper, right?
I sure am. I directed my first film. It's coming out in theaters tomorrow. I'm going all over. Tomorrow's 4:20, by the way, for those of you that aren't aware.
Got it.
What is that supposed to mean?
Oh, wait, no, I get it. That's a thing. Does everybody know that?
Yeah, Ross is too stoned to know what it means, ironically.
I just learned it. I'm 47 years old.
I'm going from city to city promoting my film. I'm going to be at the Santa Cruz Film Festival tonight, and then... And then we're going up to Berkeley in the morning, Friday morning, and then we're going to Portland, two stops, Seattle, two stops, then back down to L.A.
Well, David, the movie is about a serial killer from, like, the 60s or something?
No, it's current time. It starts, the beginning has a sort of setup to why this guy is so nuts, But it's about a group of drugged-out hippies that go to an outdoor music festival and get stalked and attacked by a killer who's obsessed with Ronald Reagan.
Sounds hilarious.
Wow.
Yeah.
His killer dog,
Nancy.
Hey, David, I called you the other day.
You did?
I did. I'll tell you, I'm going to Tribeca next week for my movie.
Oh, awesome.
And I was going to invite you as I was going through my Rolodex of notable people I know. And I think your outgoing message just had like a kid screaming and then you hung up.
Yeah.
Is that yours?
Yep.
Coco?
She was probably saying, let's go Lakers.
Is that what it was? But so it's not you going. See, the thing is when you call celebrities, they don't go, hi, this is David Arquette. You've reached my personal number because they're freaked out that people will get their number. So they have their kid yell something. Is that Coco?
Is that Coco?
That's Coco, yeah.
Or wait, Count Chocula.
Oh, I want to talk to her.
There's Richard Gere chanting in Hindi.
David, are you babysitting?
No, not babysitting.
You're the first man to get that right.
You babysit other people's kids your kids.
Listen, I don't have any kids. Rub it in. Is your wife there?
Yeah, my wife's around.
Well, this brings up a little dilemma. Don't take this in the spirit in which it's intended, David Arquette.
All right.
But your wife, Courtney Cox.
That's right.
May be a bigger celebrity than you.
Uh-oh.
Hey, oh, wow.
This is awkward.
That's news for everybody.
And if you handed the phone off to her, she might then take the week, possibly the month, in the Outbook August and April competition.
And what would that mean exactly? Because there's several ways to look at it. Kimmel booked Arquette. Teresa said, is your wife there? You said put her on the phone.
$10,000 for me.
But, no, he hands her the phone. Who booked
her? $10,000 for David Arquette to give to his favorite charity.
Wow.
Well, the first thing it means is Jeff Ross has to leave.
Right.
I would give the credit to Teresa for having the foresight to figure that one out.
Well, I'm a fan of their show. David Arquette and his wife, Courtney, produce a show called Dirt on FX.
It's a great show.
It's a very good show.
Hey, David?
Yeah.
Here's the other hypothetical.
Yeah.
I love architecture.
Yes.
I know your wife does. I know you have a passing interest in it.
For sure.
My wife hates architecture, but she loves your wife. Possibly the four of us could get together one day and just talk about our loves of each other and architecture.
Definitely. Well, that's why I gave you my number, to call up sometime.
I know, but I didn't know it was you. I just heard your kid yelling, and I thought I dialed the wrong number.
Wait a minute.
All right, now, can you put Courtney on the phone?
Well, she is resting right now. I usually do the morning shift.
But now, what if you put her on the phone and we plug the bejesus out of dirt and your movie, which is coming out tomorrow?
At which Courtney's in.
She is, but she really is resting right now.
That's a huge no.
I would kick my wife and throw the phone at her. Go in there, David. You know what?
She doesn't need to take. He doesn't need
her
money.
Wet nurse or her nanny.
What if she just said, like, Adam, leave me alone?
Okay,
yes, good enough. Do that. We'll take it.
Yeah,
Adam, leave me alone.
Adam, come on. Leave me alone.
I'm good.
Courtney, that was great, but let's try it again. And
that
this
was
time,
a nanny.
Have fun with it.
Yeah, right.
Again, with feeling. But you know what, David? I interviewed you on TV Water Cooler. I don't know if you remember me. It's Teresa Strasser.
Yeah, I do.
And you were very, very open. We asked you about rumors about you and your wife, or what was the worst rumor you'd heard, and you said, yeah, I'm tired of this rumor that we're breaking up. Everything's great between us.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'm tired of that rumor, too.
She's comatose in the next room. She'll be talking to a lawyer when she wakes up. All right, yes. David, we will give Dirt a nice big plug,
yes.
And the movie.
The Tripper.
The Tripper. Out tomorrow.
Please, I'm at... MySpace.com/TheTripperMovie. Then you can go there and see all the antics I've been up to.
All right. And any chance you're going to be in New York next week?
There's no chance, but my sister Alexis is going to be there.
No.
Uh-oh.
I mean, hey.
She doesn't like Adam.
She doesn't like me. She doesn't like anybody.
Why? Did you guys have a little thing?
She came in here with
he had a little thing. He wouldn't discuss it.
Had a little chip on his shoulder. That's all. Or her shoulder.
She was having a bad day.
Literally some guy named Chip on her shoulder.
That's right. I'm hoping to avoid that, Arquette. All right, David Arquette.
On. She's a sweetheart.
She's a delight.
She's a little tough bird sometimes.
That's all. Had her killed a long time ago if I were you. All right, David, I'm going to call you, and we're going to hang out.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Please do.
Okay.
I want you to see that out.
All right, David Arquette, everybody, the Tripper, MySpace.com. And now, okay, Jeff Ross in studio.
You're not going to. No one's winning $10,000 from booking David Arquette, right? Sorry.
No, but if Courtney Love could have talked about the impending divorce, that would. I mean,
yeah.
Eddie?
What's up, man?
Eddie Griffin, everybody.
Wow.
That's a good one.
What a hot night.
Do you know Eddie, Jeff Ross?
Yeah, very funny.
What's up, Jeff?
How you doing, killer?
I'm good.
Miss you around the Comedy Store lately.
Ah, well, you know, it's been like 2 years since I've been over there.
Yeah. Eddie Griffin. Oh, Eddie, couple of things. First off, do you remember when you did Loveline about 5 years ago?
About 5 years ago.
And Dr. Drew was talking about the heart attack you had about 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And then he said, are you taking the medication your doctor's giving you? And you said, no.
Yes, right.
And I said, why? Does it make you lightheaded or does it kill your wood? And you said, I don't know. I've never taken it.
Right.
And then Dr. Drew said, well, then you're going to die. And you said, all righty then.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Dude. That stuck with me. I thought, wow, if I was Eddie Griffin, I would take my medication.
Nah, if you was Eddie Griffin, you wouldn't take it.
Really? Why not?
Because Eddie Griffin don't trust doctors just because they got on a long white lab coat that's been...
Eddie!
He can't drive, he can't talk.
And even if we were talking on a cell phone and I was in my car, I'd be like, hey, watch it with the F word. Turns out we're on a national radio show.
Eddie, forget the white coat. What about the diplomas and the education that goes with that?
Yeah, what about them?
What about them?
Yeah, well, trial and error.
Well, you, hold on. Trial and error is named my new cop show. I play Johnny Trial.
And I'm your partner, Jennifer Error.
But, Eddie, you had a heart attack, a legitimate heart attack, 10 years ago, right?
And I'm still here, so.
But don't you worry about that?
No, man, I don't know why everybody's fighting tooth and nail over the eventuality of death, you know. As soon as you're born, they smack you on the behind. Guess what? Death is creeping around you.
Right. Hopefully in another 80 years, not Wednesday.
Well, what about Robin Harris?
I'd rather have quality over quantity.
See, I got to go with Eddie on this. People
you know, say, would you rather have 33 Jimi Hendrix years or 90 of Ronald Reagan's?
Mm.
Oh, no, he got some ass, dude.
I'm going with the Hendrix years. I'm with you.
Thank you very much.
I lived the Hendrix years and then didn't have the wherewithal to choke on my own vomit, which still bothers me.
You have to go to Ronald Reagan? Couldn't it be Hendrix to Ray Charles?
I had to go to Ronald Reagan because, you know, I never liked the old dude. I remember when he first introduced crack to the hood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what a great guy he was.
Wait, you're not one of those guys. The Reagan
yes,
brought
is.
Crack to the hood?
Yeah, I mean, he lived long enough to where you can, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, forget who you are.
My name is Danny.
Wait a minute. What's that? Who are you?
I try to forget who I am.
My name's Danny Bonaducci. So here, I have a question for you, Eddie.
What's up, Danny?
How you doing, man? How much crack have you bought in the hood?
None at all.
Well, I bought about $300,000-$400,000 worth, and you know what? Reagan was never there.
Well, you know, he didn't have to be. He had a distribution system called People.
Yeah, and I've met those people, yet I dare not blame Ronald.
I met the boss down in, you know, Columbia and everywhere else. You know, we called it, what was that, Iran, Contra scan?
Well, wait a second.
No, I met my dealer named Ghost till somebody shot him in the head right in front of me.
We got a
and
black...
That also wasn't Reagan.
Yeah.
So we got a black comic who's had a heart attack that's never done crack, and a redheaded guy who has.
And his crack dealer Ghost was shot right in front of him.
All right, so Eddie.
He has a new TV show.
When is the last time you saw a doctor about your heart?
I go like every 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
Oh, that's good.
And they say the
new... You do the treadmill test. They wire you up like a $1 million man. You know.
Stress test, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's all right.
You watch your diet and all that?
Yeah, baby, yeah.
All right. And then when it comes to the Ferrari crash.
Well, you know, I said I tell jokes. I never said I was a race car driver.
Right. And a lot of people speculated that you did that on purpose to get publicity for the movie.
Well, here, let me give this this line to the speculative people. Anybody who thinks somebody's going to wreck $1.5 million car without a helmet, leave with a knot on your head, and bruised up just for a publicity stunt. You got to be crazy.
It worked for the governor of New Jersey.
That hasn't hurt my career much either.
Eddie, do you have any thoughts on Imus?
Imus? I don't know, man. Imus has been, you know, that way for a long time.
Right.
I would have took his check and paid the tuition to all the girls on the basketball team, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I'd have had all his sponsors that dropped ship send those checks to the United Negro College Fund.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a way to turn a negative into a positive by just breaking his pockets and sending it to the right place.
And do you think but you don't think he should have been fired?
No, man, come on, man. He's been that way for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say that way, do you think he's racist?
No!
He's a comedian. He's doing shtick, right, Eddie?
Well,
hey, what are you talking about? Do I think he's racist? No! Of course he's racist.
Oh. Right.
That's my point.
Right.
Of course.
Right.
And he's been that way a long time, but nobody's called him on it.
You know, and he's not going to change overnight.
He made fun of everybody, though, right? Not just African American.
I don't know, man. I didn't really listen to the show, you know.
Right. Well,
not the target demo.
How do you, just based on the Ronald Reagan dropping crack off to the inner city plan, what about the levees over there in New Orleans?
Mm.
Do you think we blew those up?
Who's we?
We meaning
Whitey.
Whitey?
Who's Whitey?
Well, some Jewy.
Don't mess with some Whitey.
Whitey is a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're trailer trash and you're down there drowning with the brothers. I don't think they consider you.
Well,
white.
The government. Do you think the government had anything to
there
do with
you
those
go.
Levies?
There's the weed. That's the one I want to hear.
The government.
Of course.
You think they blew up the levees?
No, Kennedy never got shot in Dallas.
So you do think they blew up the levees?
I think they did a whole lot of crap.
Really? So you think...
No wonder you had a heart attack. You're busy making this crap up at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, who cares, man? You know.
All right, so...
The Ferrari was slow compared to his conspiracy theories.
Eddie...
I don't even believe in conspiracy theory. Those two words should go together. So conspiracy, people have gotten together and conspired. And it is not a theory.
I want you to know that I'm going to be the one educated adult over 40 years of age that is going to see Redline this weekend. Yeah. I love car movies. You're talking to a guy who saw all the Fast and the Furious movies, but never saw. I've seen all the Fast. I've seen the Fast and Furious trilogy, but not the Godfather trilogy. If you want to know what a intellectual heavy hitter I am,
just for fun. Now that I think about it, because Adam brought up a good point, there are a bunch of people that have gotten together and do believe you crashed that Ferrari on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've already said you didn't do it, but then you said conspiracy and theory don't go together.
Ah.
So haven't you already proved that Adam's right and you did, in fact, crash that Ferrari on purpose? Because mm-hmm. there is a group
Johnny,
of people that believe it.
Bonaducci.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Put the crack pipe down.
Right. Now,
put the
crack pipe down is a fine response, but not an answer.
I think
Danny makes a valid point.
So do I, but put the crack pipe down and stop beating transvestites is always an easy thing to say when you're not really that clever. and you've possibly gotten yourself in a hole.
Here we go.
Now it's on.
Yes, on Bonaduce.
Okay, I am shaking at the wit. We're going to sword fight now.
What say you, Eddie?
What say I? Mm-hmm. I say again, was not my car. I am not a race car driver. Of course, I would not run myself into a wall. Mm-hmm. Period.
All right, so
I don't care if 1 million people got together and started singing Kumbaya, Eddie Griffin wrecked the car.
So right. A group of people believing something doesn't make it so.
You have a point there, Bonnie.
Thank you, sir. Right.
Touché.
How would you,
in that case, and secondly,
it was a
how did you know he was holding a crack pipe? You're not even in studio. We need to take a break. Ross, put the pot brownie down.
Eddie, a conspiracy theory, not going into a wall. How would you explain your performance at the Pam Anderson roast last year?
The performance going into a wall.
He's trying to say that
you're talking about yourself.
Oh, snap. All right, let me, how about, I have a racist theory, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh.
Eddie.
Great.
It's good. It's not bad racist, but it's, well,
it's a
you
compliment.
Guys tell
more
me.
A compliment?
You guys tell me what you think. Yeah, I would do it after the break, but I want to have Eddie tell me what he thinks about this. Eddie?
Yeah, Bob.
All right. How about this theory? Because I've been at the roast enough, and here's how the roasts work. And, Jeff, it's perfect because you guys represent both sides of the roast spectrum.
Funny.
And then, my theory will chime in.
All right.
I think it's going to be applicable here. The brothers, the black community, great improvisers.
Mm-hmm.
This is what makes them great playing jazz. This is what makes them great on the hardwood. This is what makes them great when they're doing comedy. Great improvisers. That culture scats. I mean, they do it off the top of their head. You know, you talk about Larry Bird versus Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan was an improviser. Dr. J was an improviser. Whereas Larry Bird was a fundamentals guy.
Michael Jordan was also a fundamentals guy and quite the hard worker.
Well,
there's
a good point.
Yeah.
Okay, good point.
He's
which is when you take hard work and...
I mean, Larry Bird was quite the improviser also. I mean, let's not get it twisted, man.
But listen, Eddie, I'm going to put you on hold if you crap on my point 10 seconds into it. Just listen for a second. Would you undercover, brother? Going to deep cover, undercover, brother.
Going to deep cover.
Now, yes.
But you want me to answer the question?
No, I'm not done yet. Yes, Michael Jordan was the greatest because not only did he prepare, but he was a great improviser. I'll give you that. But I will say, in general, when you take the Jews and the brothers stronger in the improvising. Okay? Take jazz, for an example. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you with me, Eddie?
I'm with you.
This is not a slight. This is a compliment. So, Jews, not so much into the improvising. That's why you don't have a whole bunch of them running around the court doing the round the back dish. And a whole bunch.
That's a factor, but anyway.
A whole bunch going sick on the saxophone either. But prepare. Thus, law school. Thus, being a doctor. What do you have to do?
You have to improvise in court.
You have to sit around and spend your whole weekend studying. Right?
Thus, owning the team.
Thus owning the team, yes. That's right.
This is doing a lot, both for Jews and the black community.
You know what I really got to do? I got to pick up the crack pipe right now.
Pick up the crack pipe now.
I swear to God, you give me a blowtorch and a crack pipe right now, this might be interesting.
Now, when you watch the roast, when you sit on the dais there for what feels like 5 hours, you see the Jews come out, and they got a pile of papers that they've been going over for the last 3 months. Whereas Eddie Griffin shows up and says, who are we roasting?
Jeff Ross, like, is the Talmudic scholar of the roast.
That's right. Whereas Eddie scats at the roast.
That's
yes?
the second roast I ever did, and they called me like 2 days before that roast was going
that
down.
That is true.
But you wrote nothing down.
Man, I got time to write it. I just flew in.
But you've really written it. Eddie, come on. They gave you a year to prepare. What would
By the way, what'd they do? Confiscate your pen before you got on the plane?
A year to prepare? No, I probably wouldn't have wrote a damn thing down.
Yeah, that's my point. You scat. Jeff prepares.
Plus, I dress up. You know, Eddie, you wore like juicy sweats or something, remember?
Juicy sweats. Come on, Jeff Ross came out in a tutu, some panties dipped in hot olive oil and roller skates.
Is that right?
I wore a fur coat, actually.
All right, before we get pulled off the air,
Eddie, you're the best.
Half hour
you're
behind.
The best, Eddie.
Hey, you know I love
Eddie,
you,
good
Jeff.
Times, brother. Come in and see us, please. I love talking to you. All right.
Good luck with the movie, man.
Red Line, everybody.
Did it go that badly at the roast for Eddie? I didn't see that.
They cut him down to about 30 seconds.
Well, if you would like to see, where are we working together Saturday night?
Morongo Casino.
If you'd like to see what a fully prepared comedian, that would be you,
yeah,
does, and does really, really, really well, thank from you, what I understand. And what Eddie Griffin does, but apparently sucks at it, that's mm-hmm, what I do. I've yes, never written a joke in my whole life.
I want to go to Hawaii.
You guys, I
walk out on stage and say hi and
Jim,
start.
That's
so
right.
What's going to happen? Am I headlining? Are you headlining? How does this go down?
Well, to be honest with you,
I can't imagine that
Eddie Griffin's now signed up. He's going to headline.
I'm a headliner. I headline.
I think Danny's headlining.
Let's argue about this off the air.
Wait. Just for fun, because it'll take 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
This goes anyway the boss of this radio station that booked you says. But
Mike August?
Having said that, I don't care if you have like a thing.
If Mike August is in charge, it's going to start an hour late.
No, if it means something to you, you do whatever you want, man. I don't care. I'm fine. I make a buck either way.
All right.
That could have been discussed during the commercial.
All right, let's take a break. You guys got what I meant with the brothers and the Jews and the prep versus the improvising, right?
Yeah. All I know is this guy's a headliner.
Thank you. We'll take a quick break. We'll talk to Jeff Ross. Maybe we'll finish the news. Who knows? Next on the Adam Carolla Show.
And his voice sets my ears on fire. Sanjay.
I laugh not only at Rich Banks' songs, but I laugh at his wife walking down to the basement at 2 a.m. after his third take of Sanjaya, yelling, "Would you please shut the F up? I married a musician, not Weird Al. God damn it." Jeff Ross in studio, everybody. Jeff's going to be with Danny Bonaducci at the Morongo Casino this Saturday. We got a couple of tickets to give away.
Oh,
we'll
cool,
give those away. T, though, yes, first. The news!
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter, on this station right now.
More false starts than my career. Last mm-hmm, night on American Idol.
That was great.
Elimination. Let's take a listen to Ryan Seacrest mm-hmm, as he prepared to say goodbye to one of the so-called Magnificent Seven.
America voted after the biggest top seven vote in Idol history. Over 38 million votes. Sanjaya, you are going home tonight.
And he cried.
Yes. Yeah. Congratulations, America.
Mangina cried?
Yes. He buried his head in Lakeisha's shoulder.
Yes.
And mm-hmm, didn't want to be seen. For the first time, they let his eyes not be grabbed by the camera, and he wept. He's good. 17.
I know. We all feel sorry for him. When I was 17, I was living in a garage and looking forward to a life of cleaning carpets after I graduated from high school. And my heart goes out to this guy. He's probably on top of your daughter right now, America.
Or son.
Or son.
He's saying,
yes,
let's give him something
you,
to talk about. And
you want to hear something
yes,
sad, though? 38 million people voted.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder how many people voted in our last presidential election. And I thought, was it 100 million? Turns out, 2 weeks of American Idol voting equals what we did in our last election. It was like 62 million or something like that. Pathetic.
And ironically, I voted for Ruben Studdard for president. That's how confused I was.
You hear that,
thing,
Eddie?
I think he split the vote. That's what happened.
He split a 6-foot sub is what he did.
And by the way, Ryan Seacrest is losing his mind. The
yes,
beginning of the show, he's like, this is
American Idol.
It's a dramatic pause.
It worked for Casey Kasem for 600 years.
Well, Simon had to apologize last night. There was some confusion.
Wait a minute. Yes. I had an idea.
Yeah.
You know, when you're a blowhard or when you become a blowhard, you either talk too much, too fast, and too loud, or you give these super long pregnant pauses. It's the other side of the blowhard spectrum. You ever listen to like Jim Rome on the radio and they go, Roger Clemens. Good man. It's like blowhardy is either a big wind of just gaseous air coming out of someone's mouth or super long pauses.
Like
American! Five Mississippi. Idol! Jeff! Ross. Thank you. Sorry.
It's like how William Shatner acts.
That's right.
The long pauses.
Right. It's dramatic. Now, Simon had to apologize because after Chris Richardson sang, he said, my hearts and prayers go out to Virginia Tech. I have a lot of friends over there. Be strong. But while he was saying this, Simon was having a discussion with Paula, and he couldn't really hear that Chris was giving a shout out to the families in Virginia. And so a camera picked up a shot of Simon. He looked like he was rolling his eyes at what Chris Richardson had just said. And they took the very top of the show to straighten this out. Here is Simon Cowell explaining what happened.
Last night on the show, Chris and myself got into quite a heated debate about singing through your nose.
Right.
And after I finished talking, I was talking to Paula, and unfortunately I didn't hear Chris mention the people of Virginia. There was on camera, I gave a look, but in fact I was giving a look to Paula, and the implication was I was disrespecting the victims. And I just want to absolutely set the record straight. I didn't hear what Chris was saying.
Well, that's nice. Tune out of your own show. That's smart.
And I don't care about the victims.
Yes.
And may I add, I don't care about the victims.
Yeah, I would have loved it if he just said that. Just get out. It looked like I didn't care. And, well, I don't. Just have the walls.
And he was very careful to straighten it out. I think probably they got some angry letters and phone calls.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you've got to feel bad. If somebody really believes, like I said, I've said 100 times, I won't apologize for what I meant if I meant no harm, but I'll apologize to anybody it hurt personally. Mm-hmm. That's what I think the guy had to do. He didn't mean anything, but he felt, you know, I hurt people. Let me say I'm sorry. Because I met him a couple times. He's kind of a regular guy.
And, yeah, and that was more of an explanation than an apology. Yeah.
And the weird thing was the shooter, this crazy Cho guy, in between shootings, he mailed a letter to NBC and he voted for Sanjaya.
Oh, Jeff, too soon.
Too soon?
Too soon.
Tomorrow?
No, a little later on in the show.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't think we started off on the right foot together, but I don't think too soon. I think it's balls.
You know, I'm trying to lighten the mood. I listened to an hour of it.
Look, it's the first time that you improvised, everyone. Let's not be hard on him.
Yeah, give it up.
You did take the dramatic pause.
Yeah.
That's true.
I appreciated that much.
But that pause couldn't have lasted until Frosty Hiding Frank at the end.
I imagine you've been a comedian for many years.
Sure.
It's a good profession, fulfilling.
Fantastic.
Yet there are some jobs that are not gratifying, and the general social survey by the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago has done an investigation on the least fulfilling jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what they have found. The least
talking
fulfilling.
To people about their unfulfilling jobs.
Oddly enough.
That should be on there. Yes. Teresa Strasser. Yes.
Radio news, number one. 21% of construction workers say that their work is gratifying. Mm. That means most construction workers do not feel it.
I thought it was out of 40%.
That is the least satisfying job.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, apparently.
You're building something. I mean,
yeah, you'd think it'd be sort of gratifying. You work with your hands. You see something to completion.
You write a good joke, Ross, when you do a joke that like just it meant exactly what you said, you get the reaction that you want. That's kind of something that may last a little bit, but you and I, for a living, do nothing that will actually last. The people that build stuff.
I think that Sanjaya joke will stand the test of time.
My grandfather was a construction worker. He would point to the George Washington Bridge and the Port Authority Terminal with pride every time he drove back. What do I point to?
just some joke.
Hey,
in the
Yeoman's grave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a
well,
treadmill to oblivion.
I'll tell you the from someone who's been there, there's a couple things. One, it's depressing working on everyone's dream house and going home to your crappy apartment. When I used to install closets into people's houses that were bigger than my apartment.
Right.
And I installed $9,000 closets in people's houses, but I would pull up in an $1,800 truck. It gets really depressing making everyone's house a home and you're living in a crappy apartment. That's number one. Number two, most carpenters and most construction workers take a union. They end up doing drywall, roofing. They end up doing foundation. Mm-hmm. So you show up and hang sheetrock for 8 hours a day and then go to the next job. You're not sitting there like Norm in the new Yankee workshop putting the beadboard on your china hutch. You know, yes. It's not that romantic. It's repetitive crap.
Well, just right. So you know, roofers, that made the top five unsatisfying jobs.
You mean
food
the one
preparers,
that put knockout drops in chicks' drinks?
That's roofies. Oh. Food preparers, pack and packagers, furniture sales people, cashiers, bartenders, and freight stock and material handlers. All unsatisfying jobs, and also waiters on the most depressed list with only 27% satisfied.
Well, waiters, every waiter I've known has complained because their main argument is these people tell you to go get their food. Like, what do you think the gig is, by the way?
You're,
hey, like I pull into a restaurant. Hey, would you like to take that smock off and join me and my wife for my anniversary? Go get us our goddamn food.
I happened to see Jeff at a restaurant yesterday, and he said, you know, those people at that Morongo, they want me to make them laugh.
I know. It's like,
well, what's that?
There is this sort of thing where it's like, hey, could you get me a drink? Hey, what do I look like? You're serving?
Yes.
You know what the worst my thing is? Is when they forget something and they act like it's no big deal. Oh, they never brought that? You never brought that.
Right. It turns into they.
With delivery.
But they do the they with the same as I, where you go, can I get some more iced tea?
You still want that? Oh, you still want that?
Well, let me do the most fulfilling part of my job for both me and the listeners. I'm mm-hmm. Teresa Strasser, and that's the news.
Nice. Teresa Strasser with the real news. You, CNN.
By the way, you bartenders, cry me a river. Yeah. Come home with $200 worth of cash so you don't have to report to the government five phone numbers from that bachelorette party.
And not if you're not a smart bartender that's selling blow over the counter like some of us were.
Please, and then doing shots with the staff and nailing a couple of waitresses and a hostess along
it's
the way.
Please, like you were
cry
there.
Me a river.
And they're always drinking on the
Jesus
job.
Jesus Christ.
When I was an open micer, I lived in New Jersey. I'd have to drive into New York City to do stand-up, and this... I'd always ask for a receipt from the toll taker.
Right.
The New Jersey Turnpike. It was like 85 cents every day. I had no money. I was driving into New York for a $10 or $20 spot.
Right.
I needed a receipt. My accountant said, get a receipt every day. It adds up. The guy would give me attitude.
You're not doing your people any help, by the way, Jeff.
Helping.
But go ahead.
The guy would give me attitude about give me a receipt. He's like, yeah, you're going to work. It's like 11 o'clock on a Tuesday. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to work. And I always thought, that is the most unfulfilling job, being a toll taker. Any job that when you call in sick, they just replace you with a basket. Has to be the worst.
That's right. Get the hamper on the blower. We need to, Phil's not showing up. All right, we need to take a break. We'll be back. Jeff Ross will be here. He can't be replaced with a basket. It's going to take two baskets to replace Jeff Ross. Take a quick break. Back next.
Outbook August in April. All this month on the Adam Carolla Show.
Oh, hot chick experts. I see you in hell, Miss One Upper. Jeff Ross.
Yo, boss.
Speaking of guests we love,
fun
Jeff
show,
Ross.
Thank you.
Good times, buddy. Jeff is going to be at the Morongo Casino this
opening
Saturday.
For Danny Bonaducci.
That's right. Warming the crowd up for Danny Bonaducci at 9 o'clock. Also, Jim Florentine, you know him as Special Ed.
I want to go to Hawaii.
Well,
yeah.
Will he be warming up for you?
I think it's going to be a great show. I don't care about the order.
When was the last time you didn't headline Jeff Ross?
I can't remember. I think opening for Stephen Wright 12 years ago.
Well, how does it...
Is it on vaudeville?
How does it work? You start
it's
out...
It's the Jeff Ross Show!
You start off wanting to be a stand-up comedian.
Me and Danny Bonaducci!
Hello, my honey!
You say the Jews can't improvise.
He's reading that off. No, Jeff, you start off wanting to do stand-up when? I'm very interested in how people pursued their dreams. I think it's one of the more important things and more important lessons we can all learn in life. Watch the Biography Channel. Watch the celebrities, not what they've achieved once they achieved it, but how they got started, how they went about it. I mean, when did you realize you wanted to do stand-up?
I was very fortunate in that I'd gone to film school, didn't think or want to be a stand-up. A friend of mine sort of tricked me into taking a writing stand-up class because he thought it would be fun and good for me and a break from my miserable existence, basically taking care of my grandfather and trying to start a small business, video production business.
Uh-huh.
So the lesson to be learned here is when you find something exciting, a path that you don't necessarily know where it's going, follow it.
So you got into this and you became acquainted with stand-up, but it wasn't one of these things where you knew in the ninth grade you wanted to do stand-up.
It didn't make any sense to me. I thought comics were guys in the Catskills and tuxedos. I didn't know you could be a stand-up who goes on MTV, and there was no Comedy Central.
Right.
For me, it was a happy accident that I embraced. I loved it right away, and I went with it.
And you start off by doing open mics.
Open mic. I took a class for 10 weeks, basically because I thought it would be fun.
Was that helpful?
Very, very helpful.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you learn in
that
learned, class?
I learned basically what a stand-up was. Just walking out there, taking the mic out of the mic stand and putting the mic stand behind you, like technical stuff.
Right.
They taught us where the open mics were.
Do you remember any of your first jokes that you came up with in that class?
I still do, like 30 of them.
Yeah.
30.
It's
drowning down.
Most good comics, I know I always talk about Bill Hicks as one of my favorite comics, but the man didn't utter a different word in the last decade of his life.
Oh, really? Yeah. Did the same material?
Yeah. That it killed him, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was probably the best comic ever that I knew of.
I still do one of my first jokes.
Yes, what was it?
I say, my real last name is, it's true, is Lifshultz.
Right.
That's an old Hebrew word. It means, hey, you ought to change that.
And,
that's good.
And who do you think? I've known you for a while, Jeff, but I didn't really talk about other comedians. Who do you like? Who do you think is a great comedian? Past or present?
Well, past, I always go with Buddy Hackett. He was my favorite all-time comedian, the funniest guy in the world. And also, he was my parents' favorite comedian. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to get to know him really well later on through the Friars Club and the roast and all that. But to me, he was the single funniest guy. He could write jokes, but he could also improvise. He could hold an audience.
Mm-hmm.
He just had it all.
My entire contact with Buddy Hackett is he was in the square above me on Hollywood Squares, and his knees wouldn't take it, so we had to switch squares at show 3.
Aww.
And you got in Hackett Square?
I had to climb up to the top square because Buddy couldn't make it anymore.
I couldn't go up the spiral staircase.
Good, out of respect. You should have offered in the first place.
I didn't realize the bad guy. I thought the elevation was the respect.
By the way, the same thing happened to me, I swear, on that same show with Star Jones. And she was a square above me, you know, those glass floors.
Yes.
And it was not a pretty sight.
Oh,
and
no.
By the way, it was after lunch. She was just like farting down on me. It was horrible.
But you looked up through the glass and saw?
Sea urchin.
I saw it was like two seals fighting.
Like being in an aquarium.
All I could see was her claw feet hanging over her sandals looking down at me like
I
some
just
kind
threw
of
up in my mouth.
Yes, that was the old Star Jones, which was 3 of the current Star Joneses. So
yeah, but she's just as evil, just thinner.
You started to go, so you started doing open mics, you started to have some success, and then you start getting into
opening.
I'm
in New Jersey, I'm running a video production company with a buddy from college. We're struggling. My grandfather is my roommate. He's very sick. I take care of him most of the time. So late at night, I could sneak out in my Jeep to the city, about a 17-mile drive from Springfield, New Jersey. And I would do the open mics until 2 in the morning. I would do 1 or 2 a night. I became obsessed with it. It was my social life. It was the only creative outlet I had. I loved it right away. And anybody who tries it once knows that energy that you don't get in other sort forms of entertainment. I was a black belt in karate. It wasn't as exciting as
doing stand-up. Not only was Jeff Ross a black belt in karate, but the youngest
black belt in the country.
The youngest black belt in the country.
For a year.
I was 10 and a half.
10 and a half as the youngest black belt. Although, when I later on, Jeff, a frail man, by the way, because when we went on a some man show sabbatical with him, I think he hurt himself getting out of bed. I can't.
I threw my back out playing football on a man show retreat,
and then
everybody made fun of me. And the only one who took care of me was Jimmy Kimmel.
Then Jimmy got him a massage, but cousin Sal broke in while he was getting a massage
and photographed me
and started breaking wind. What was he doing to you?
I'm getting a massage. I'm in total agony. We found a masseuse who had come to this retreat hotel.
We were in Santa Barbara, I think.
And just as I'm naked on the table and this lovely middle-aged matronly masseuse, you know, is very happy to help out and putting all her effort into taking this pain away.
The door
busts open and cousin Sal comes in with a couple other schmucks, you know, just for fun, dancing to some music and photographs it and farts right in my face. And I said, Sal, this is a grown lady with children. You can't act like this. So that was the funniest thing. The madder I get, they would come in every 5 minutes.
The masseuse was not happy about it either. Everyone else.
That is not aromatherapy.
Everyone else thought it was funny. But
it was the maddest I ever got at Sal during the man show years. I remember saying, Sal, this officially means we're not friends. You don't like me. If you could do this to me when I'm in this much pain, it officially means we're acquaintances. We're not friends.
You downgraded him to acquaintance for that.
Right.
The only thing that makes the farting funnier to me is to have a super serious Jeff Ross yelling, it's not fun. Yeah. That's the only thing that ups the comedy farting ante for me.
Yeah.
Yes, Sal has destroyed many a workplace, many a massage room.
As a matter of fact, the next week when we got back to the office at the man show, I remember him like messing with my desk, like insult to injury, like hiding my chair, like messing my chair so my back would hurt worse.
Is that his way of showing love?
No.
And, you know, now we're real tight, but listen, I mean, I'm sure he could add some details to the story, but I do remember taking his chair and putting mustard all over it, and then the producer, Doug DeLuca, made me pay for the chair that I put mustard all over. I was like, you don't understand!
Can you save the receipt for your accountant? That's a business expense.
Cousin Sal, I once had Cousin Sal pick me and Jimmy up from the airport when we flew into New York, and we drove in a circle around Long Island for 2 hours because he couldn't find his house. And then when I got to his house, I slept on this bed in the guest room. I was covered with dirty clothes because they used it as a hamper. And Sal's crazy mother, thinking I was Jimmy, I've never met the woman before in my life, but thinking I was Jimmy sleeping in the guest room, Fran, dove on me in the morning and started tackling me and smothering me with kisses like she wanted to do with Jimmy, but it was one of these things out of the sitcom where I took the filthy sweatpants off my head and she started screaming.
Mommy!
I realize insanity runs in the Iacono family.
I think that's
probably
adorable.
Not Sal's fault.
That's sweet and affectionate.
I remember one time we were all at the Super Bowl together, you, me, Jimmy, and Sal, and we had to all share one room, basically. For whatever reason, Jimmy and I slept on a cot together, and you got the big bed in the room. I don't know how you worked this out with
sheer
Jimmy.
Size. Yeah, because Jimmy snores. And Jimmy says he doesn't snore like half the people who snore. Like, you know, when you wake them up and you go, hey, dude, you're snoring. They go, I don't snore. And you go, do you think this is what I do, by the way?
I'm just this bored.
Here's what I do. When I bunk up with a fella, here's what I do. I stare at the ceiling for 2 hours, and then I wake him up and accuse him of snoring, even though he was silent as a lamb.
There's something about snoring and being informed that you do it when you're positive that you don't or anything else. I used to black out. People tell me I did all sorts of stuff I didn't know I do, but that made sense to me. Being a snorer and not knowing it, I learned at rehab. I was in rehab and you get roommates. And the biggest movie star in the world at the time kicked me in the face and said, Bonaducci, if you don't stop snoring, I'm going to kill you.
Wow. Who was
Helen Mirren?
I can't tell you, but I'm glad he and J-Lo broke
up. The worst night, and Jeff Ross will identify with this.
Wait, did I just finish this last part?
Sorry.
So we kick Sal out of the room. We have to sleep.
You know, me, for Jimmy, gas or because he's just disturbing
everyone? You're drunk.
Everyone.
You're passed out. Right. I'm half in the bag. Jimmy's right. Sort of, I think, engineering all this.
Yes.
So we keep. I keep pushing Sal out of the room. Out of the room. Get out. We gotta go sleep. Get out, Sal. We gotta go to sleep. Finally, I locked the door. I barricade the door, and he climbed into the window. 20 minutes later, and he punched me in the nuts.
Jeff, you made the very, very bad tactical mistake with Sal of getting very serious and explaining to him you didn't think his jokes were funny, which causes you more torment.
That was a big mistake.
That is the big mistake.
One of the biggest mistakes of my life.
Yes, because, see, Cousin Sal is a tormentor, and Jeff is his chew toy. That's basically how it works. If you travel with Jimmy, Sal, and Jeff, and other guys, as we do all the time, Sal will constantly be circling around Jeff, disturbing Jeff, because Jeff gets so visibly upset.
What should Jeff do to avoid this?
There's nothing I can do. He knows. He researches.
No, he knows.
Remember, I was guest hosting the Kimmel show. The show just went on the air.
He does Jeff's act, by the way. He does it. I don't take this in spirit, which is intended. He's better than Jeff is.
He knows it better than I do.
He knows it better than Jeff.
I was the first stand-up ever on Jimmy Kimmel Live. The first stand-up ever on Jimmy Kimmel Live. They begged me to come on. The producers, Daniel, is like, if you don't come on, we're going to have Pat and I. We're going to have this guy. You got to come on. You got to be the first. So they were like playing up my ego. Like, you got to be the first guy.
Right.
I show up, new suit, new jokes. I walk out there, and in the front row is Sal mouthing the punchlines on live television.
Sal would do the act, and like I said, much like Gallagher's brother,
right? He's better at
didn't miss a beat. All right, well, you want to see how good Jeff is in real life, you go down to the Morongo Casino.
Sit in the front row. Come on down, sit in the front row.
You don't have to wear a raincoat.
I was gonna say, Danny is shopping for the next Mrs. Bonaducci.
Oh, we have a poem. You know what, let's take a break. Jeff, you have a poem?
I did find something.
You crafted a
no, somebody sent this to me.
Interesting.
Yeah. Danny.
A love poem to Danny?
Somebody, one of your exes, I guess.
I don't know.
Emailed me to my MySpace a poem that they had written you.
Nice.
Mm. All right.
Knowing I was coming on the show.
We will hear that poem as delivered by Jeff Ross next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show. And now, Adam explains the 1780s guy, the WNBA.
And these ladies take this round orb and attempt to throw it through a barrel. I'm bored already.
That was Adam Explains the WNBA to 1780s Guy. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Timely and poignant is how I would describe that. Jeff Ross is in studio. Jeff can be found at the Morongo Casino this Saturday, along with Danny Bonaducci and Jim Florentine. Jeff has a poem for us, but first, we were talking about practical jokes and Kimmel and his cousin Sal. I was thinking about another retreat we went on for the Man Show where Jimmy stuffed shaving cream into my toothpaste container. He took the toothpaste out, shoved shaving cream in it, and then I brushed my teeth with shaving cream for the entire weekend, thinking this toothpaste doesn't taste good, but what else could it be? I'm squeezing it onto my brush. Now, shaving cream.
Remember the time Sal painted the punchlines of my act on my Porsche?
Jesus. Yeah, here's the problem with these guys is normally
they have money now.
They have money now. Jimmy thinks it's funny to get his Aunt Chippy's house painted. It probably cost him 15 grand for this practical joke. And yes, they painted Jeff. Oh, poor Jeff. Jeff, really?
They tried to sneak into my apartment once because they knew I was afraid of ghosts, and pretend that Sal was a ghost in the middle of the night. And my doorman like tipped me off.
Also, they knew you'd be really high at the time. Jordan Rubin is on the phone. Jordan is a comedian who's been on this show, who also worked at the Man Show for many years as a writer.
Hey.
Jordan.
Hey there.
What's happening? You were reminded of a practical joke?
Yeah, just hearing you guys, I was reminded. Well, one thing, the first thing is that Jeff, I don't even know if you know this, but one time when you were out, Sal filled a water pistol with milk, and he sprayed it all into your desk so that the next week it just started to rot and smell, and then you came back and you were like, what is that smell? And you just started circling the room like, what the hell is that? You couldn't figure it out. And it was because he'd sprayed rotten milk on your desk.
Nice.
And the other thing was that Jimmy, similar to your thing, Adam, with the toothpaste,
mm-hmm.
I had been working out, and so I bought that weight gainer stuff.
Like a big, one of those big tubs of like, you know.
That's what they're called. They're called weight gainers. They're about 3,000 calories a glass.
Yeah, he went to the Muscle Man shop. Jordan, who's perpetually skinny and obnoxious because while everyone else is worried about piling on the pounds, he's complaining that he can't put any weight on.
Correct.
So you bought the weight gain stuff.
So
you
I had
brought
the weight
it.
Gainer. I put it in my drawer, you know, my writing drawer right next to me. Left it overnight one night. Jimmy somehow went out and bought about 7 or 8 tins of that Coffee Mate stuff and filled up my entire weight gainer thing with Coffee Mate. But the most amazing part of the story is I'm so paranoid naturally that I just. Well, it was the first night I ever left it there, and I was like, I left it overnight. Some one of the people that clean out probably put acid in it or something, so I just threw it out and didn't use it.
Jordan is...
Wow, you are paranoid.
Well, neurotic would be a better and more insulting and fitting term for what Jordan is.
The only thing you could do to improve my weight gainer would be to add acid to it.
Right. You're right.
You know? I was thinking he would have replaced the weight gainer with, like, a calorie-burning powder.
Yeah, well, if they had that, we'd all be rich right
Don't
now.
Don't they make something like that, Dan?
They make all sorts of calorie burners. I can get you lots of them.
One time
I was guest, when they had guest hosts on Jimmy's show, they wouldn't let me come to rehearsal, which I found kind of dubious.
Right.
So they did all these stuff to me, and they made me think that that was always going to be what it was. They'd prank me on the show, which they did a couple times, but how they really got me was... I was shooting a guest starring role on CSI all day and then showing up just in time to do Jimmy's show live at 9.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I'd only have 20 minutes to eat and get in makeup, so I would always have a steak waiting right before I went into makeup. And just as I was about to bite into the steak, every night, 4 nights in a row, Sal would burst into my dressing room, take one bite of the steak, and throw it on the floor. And I'd have to go on hungry with low blood sugar.
Hey, our own booker, Mike August, literally had a tooth knocked out from Sal's ass when he got Yokozuna'd when he fell asleep. The worst thing you could do is fall asleep right in front of cousin Sal. He fell asleep on the sofa. Sal dropped his pants and jumped onto his head and knocked his tooth out,
by the
way. I
feel like this is an anthropology lesson in male rituals.
We should be talking to Sal about this.
We should. He's probably dropping his ass on somebody who's napping right now.
And Jeff Ross is the most fun guy because of the way he reacts. He's the most fun guy to prank.
You get a good... I'll tell you why you get a good rise out of Jeff. And Jordan, you can back me up on this.
Yeah.
He is clearly confused and wants to know why. And he's very earnest about the whole thing. And he'll go, Sal, why did you fart in my face? Why? And everyone will just start laughing their ass off.
Yeah, he constantly tries to apply reason to it.
Right, that is satisfying.
I see the good in people.
But why?
All right, Jordan. Jordan, do you have a plug, by the way? You're going to be doing stand-up anywhere?
Probably at the Improv in the next couple of weekends.
Should we just go there now and wait?
Yeah.
I'll show up there.
Jordan Rubin, everybody.
Thanks, Jordan. By the way, just one last thing about the pranking thing. One thing that Buddy Hackett taught me, we were talking about Buddy Hackett, he would never do prank shows. He never liked Punk'd, and for that matter, you know, he always said it was better to make fun of people to their face. That was funnier, and that's why the roasts, to me, are better.
Well, Sal always said it's better to put his ass on your face. That was his...
Yeah, that was his motto, actually.
That was his motto,
I think that will be on his tombstone.
So, Jeff Ross, you have a poem.
This is kind of crazy, actually.
How did you receive this poem?
Well, this morning, you know, when you guys were talking about, I guess, people, you know, stalking out Danny Bonaducci...
Mm-hmm.
Somebody email my MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you should get a heads up that this is going to happen. It's not that I'm famous now. Has nothing to do with, like, breaking Bonaducci, although there were some junkies that got a little too into me. This is Partridge Family stuff. This is people who never let go of their first crush and stuff.
That's probably my guess.
And if we're going to see a lot of each other, get ready for that.
So yeah. I don't know if you've been with this person
I'm still sending stuff to Bobby Sherman, and it's been at least 30 years.
I'll bet they are.
At least 30 years. I'm still hot on that kid's trail.
R-A-T-T-F-I-N-K, Refink. Remember that?
Yes. All right.
Another vaudeville thing?
Huh?
That was before vaudeville.
Should I read the email?
Yeah,
sure.
Is this a poem, or what is this?
Well, the guy's...
A guy?
No.
A guy?
No,
the person.
Know. This is from one of your fans. Your hair is red. This is to Danny. Your hair is red. My balls are blue. You've bedazzled my heart. Now I'm hard for you. probably shouldn't have tipped it as a guy.
No, what am I wearing? Billion stalkers.
Did you work the red hair in the bedazzler?
Yeah.
Strong stuff.
He knows your work.
Jeff Ross, everyone. You want to hear that poem read in person? You head down to the Morongo Casino. Tell your legs to head down to the Morongo Casino.
Give your face.
Tell your legs.
Tell your legs. 9 o'clock, along with Jim Florentine and our own Danny Bonaducci. How can you miss?
We'll have some fun.
Yeah, we will.
We will take ourselves a break.
Plus, this will be my first trip single to a casino with a pool.
Ah.
It's Morongo. What do you think?
But you're so shy about taking off your clothes.
So you're naked with a cat and a can of Cool Whip. Who the hell do you think that man was talking
to? Which reminds me, they said you want to leave the next morning at 10 a.m. Let's hang out for a couple hours.
You said that.
That's the note I got from your people.
I have no friggin' people. You're making that up.
Why don't you guys head down?
I had one person. Her name was Gretchen, and right now I'm locked out of the house.
You guys go have a few cocktails, or you drink an iced tea by the pool. You guys stand next to each other. It'll look like a before and after picture. It'll be fantastic. All right, so Morongo Casino this Saturday. News when we come back. Also, we have a couple of those tickets to give away. I could think of something clever, but how about you just call up and we'll give them to you?
Sounds good.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with the news next.
On the Adam Carolla Show.
Woohoo. T.
Yes.
The news. What's in it?
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter on this station right now.
Well, if you have any orange or maroon in your wardrobe, you may want to wear those colors on Friday. This is something that they're requesting at Virginia Tech. It's in memory of the events that happened April 16th. They're trying to encourage individuals to wear the Virginia Tech colors this Friday, tomorrow.
That should help.
All right, yeah.
To be a part, so everyone can be a part of the Hokie Nation and support the grieving family and friends of those lost April 16th.
All right. Still wouldn't mind a little timeline from the news. Just want to know what happened.
Well, I'll tell you this. Something you probably won't care about at all, but
thank you.
University officials at Virginia Tech announced today that CHOS victims will be awarded degrees posthumously during the commencement this year. So they will all be getting degrees. Not that it matters much.
Well, symbolically.
It's symbolic. Nice, it's probably nice for the families. I can't imagine that commencement.
What's CHO getting, though? He doesn't get it. Does he get a degree? There's going to be a debate.
Oh,
you know,
really?
There's somebody's going to say he's a victim as well, and he deserves a degree.
Absolutely. There will be somebody that says something like that, but I believe he failed a class.
Mm-hmm.
I heard this on this station that one of the people he shot had failed him. So he might not have been getting a diploma anyway. But it was a particular show that I don't always believe their information.
This from a man with a bachelor's in bedazzling.
How about a master's?
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
I mean, a BA has better alliteration, but
yeah, that's what I was going for. You're right.
Orders of the magnitude less sad, but there were tears. Sanjaya, no longer on American Idol. The bottom three were Lakeisha Jones, Blake Edwards, and Sanjaya. He sang, "Let's give him something to talk about."
Let's give him something to talk about.
Rag.
Let's give him something to talk about.
He cried a couple of tears and now he's gone.
Let's give him something to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't say that I'm going to miss him. Although, as I said last year, I don't have the energy to do it, but as I said last year, if I thought I gave a really horrible performance, Bonaducci, I feel like this would be right up your alley.
Giving a horrible performance?
Well, not only that, but having all three judges, even the nice ones like Paula, go, now tonight was not your night. You have a pretty good idea when you didn't perform at all. It's like when you didn't answer half the questions on the test, you get a pretty good idea what kind of grade you're going to get. So Sanjaya, based on Simon saying this was the worst thing he's ever heard in his life and everyone else agreeing with him, must have had some inkling that he was going to get S-canned last night. I would have a different version of that song prepared.
What do you mean?
Oh.
One that may have not stuck to the lyrics that Bonnie Raitt penned in 1992. One that may have had something to do with Randy being a blowhard. Yeah. Wish I had it in front of me. All right.
No, I was going to help you out because I didn't know if you had it. I was just going to make one up.
Well, I'll try. Paula is talking about something. I hear her slurring. Goddamn, she's boring. She's always drinking. And I'm thinking, if Simon wasn't such an age, he'd hop on that old sack. And it just goes and goes and goes.
But
would
nice.
It be... I ran out of steam halfway in order. The point
I
is,
noticed that.
Would this be the greatest news story ever?
He did change the lyrics.
He did do his hair.
Yes, to hair.
At the very end. But if somebody just decided to go postal
right
up there.
And be angry.
Would they pull the mic out of the guy's hand? You know, it's a live show.
Yeah.
What would they do?
On the East Coast, I think they'd have to let it go. I think they'd have no option. If he walked out there and he said, let's give him something to talk about. Randy's fat and filled with gout.
Right.
Paul Abdul has gone insane. Is it Vicodin or all the cocaine? Have you done that? I think they'd have to let it go on the East Coast.
And I think you would be a hero to most Americans.
And then get us on that show.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do it.
We'll do a Smothers Brothers act.
Bonaducci.
Flip you for who's the stupid
me
one.
And you, me and you next. I'll be Don. You be Tony Orlando.
It was an hour-long results show, which meant there was a lot of stretching, and even Ryan alluded to the stretching.
Mm-hmm.
Fergie
he was talking about his body. He's having to stretch so he can be my height.
Paula had to be on the time release Vicodin hour. Yeah, there was a couple performances, and even for me, I was like, let's get to the voting. But I was shocked, and I had a strange notion. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but do you think the events at Virginia Tech that happened the night of the voting, do you think they had an impact on... They had 38 million votes, mm-hmm. and obviously not many of them were for Sanjaya. Do you think people just thought, this isn't funny anymore, and... We shouldn't keep this charade going.
No.
It's interesting. Charade.
Yeah, she said I heard it. I let it go.
Oh,
she's a cretin.
Can you get, baby?
She's a cretin.
Do you say pink or do you say mauve?
I'm going to my aunt's house to have a tomato just right after the show.
The second it came out of my mouth, I had regret.
Well, listen here, Queenie. Let me say this. Yeah, maybe people sobered up and said, I'm not in the mood for the charade anymore.
Well, it's interesting you should mention sobriety. Lindsay
Didn't
Lohan.
Didn't Volkswagen make that car?
I think they said we shan't participate in the charade.
Ending a sentence in a preposition is something up with which I will not push.
Winston Churchill. Mm. Lindsay Lohan is talking about her experience in rehab. She did an interview with Allure magazine that comes out next week. And she said, it's so weird that I went to rehab. I always said I would die before I went to rehab.
I bet that about her too, actually, and lost money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. She's still hanging out in clubs. And it's my understanding that you shouldn't go to the
first thing I tell you, people, places, and things.
Right.
Don't hang out with the people you got high with. Don't go to the places you got high with. And don't do the things you got high with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And she says she has no intention of giving up the club scene because, quote, that's my life.
Thank you. Now I can sleep tonight.
After a year's worth of AA meetings and, of course, rehab, she says this. I don't know that I'm necessarily an addict.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's very humble.
Well, she doesn't.
She's not 21 yet, which is interesting.
Well, it gives your odds almost zero of recovery.
But
it's early intervention. That would be, you'd think that'd be helpful.
Who is she, Meryl Streep? Like, what is her body of work? She's 19 and a half. I mean,
herpes,
she started,
love bug.
Started working early. Is
apparently
done,
you guys didn't see Freaky Friday.
She's done more.
Some of us did, but like the Jodie Foster version better.
I mean, seriously, she's done more stinkers than she's done hits. She's attractive, but, you know, yeah. I mean.
No, she's, what's that girl's name that became famous for being just drunk? Tara Reid. That's what she is now. She's just a freak show. She's the new Anna Nicole. Mm. She doesn't, like, do anything anymore.
All right.
Well, speaking of freak shows, Larry Burkhead is back in the news. He is the father of Dani Lynn, Anna Nicole Smith's baby. Now, here is what's being reported by the National Enquirer. It is being reported that a 38-year-old male model claims that Larry Burkhead is gay or at least bisexual. This male model's name is Carrick Ross, and he says he had a 2-month affair with Larry back in 2000, which included 8 to 10 sexual encounters. And for what it's worth, the National Enquirer is reporting that this male model passed a lie detector test.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Frosted tips. Not enough evidence for you folks.
Right. Tell us about the frosted tips.
Can you talk to a gay model to learn these things? Listen, when I see the frosted tips, that is a billboard. That means a hack host, or it means gay, or possibly both.
This charade has come to an end. I'm Teresa Strasser, and that's the news.
Teresa Strasser with the real news. QCNN.
Well, we'll take a break, and when we come back, I will give you some more thoughts and insights about this Virginia Tech thing. Also, I think we have a couple of tickets to give away to the Morongo Casino night with Danny and Jeff Ross and Jim Florentine. 866-901-ADAM. Call in, chime in. I'll give you these tickets, and we'll talk.
Hello there. This is Mick Fleetwood. I'm listening to The Adam Carolla Show.
All right. Well, we were going to make a contest out of this, but I realized that would be more about you and less about moi,
as
Teresa says. James?
Go.
Yeah. You want to go to Morongo?
Sure do, sir.
You're in.
Dude, you can sound a little happier about it.
Jason?
What's up, guys?
You want to go to Morongo?
I live right there, yeah.
Cool.
Say the magic word.
Please.
Okay.
Schwadigi.
And
wow.
Let's see. Who's out in Palm?
That's quite the schedule you are on.
Palm Desert. Hey, David?
Yeah.
Calling from Palm Desert?
Yes, sir.
You want to go to Morongo?
I certainly do.
I will see you there. When I say see you there, I mean Danny will see you there.
I will see you there.
All right, thanks, guys.
Good times, buddy.
You all have earned your pay right now.
Now let's talk about me.
All right, good.
I am not done with this Virginia Tech thing by a long shot. I have many, many thoughts about it. First off, Mike, our writer Mike, came in here and said, well, he said, pardon the pun, Imus dodged a bullet with this. He's off the hook now. And I said, oh, no, he's getting screwed going and coming, because now is when the backlash was going to begin about people trying to get Imus back on the air whenever somebody's wrongfully whatevered. Even if they're a despicable person, like Imus may be by all accounts, there's still going to be a groundswell of, you know what? He was wronged, and we were about to do that. Imus's timing couldn't have been worse. This tragedy didn't happen fast enough to get people off of focusing on him in a vacuum of media when apparently there was no news going on that week. So we all focused on Imus. He got ass canned. Then the tragedy happened right about the time we should all be talking about how Imus didn't deserve it and what a good guy is. And we signed this petition to get him back on the air, who's a fan of free speech.
Right.
So he gets the worst of all worlds as far as I can tell. And, obviously nowhere near the tragedy for him that happened to these kids, of course, but this was not a windfall for Imus. And secondly, I want some news. I know I've been screaming about this, but I'm tired of sappy emails, and I'm tired of talking to parents who are obviously grieving. I'm tired of what I call the no S Sherlock news. Geez, what were you thinking when that shooting was going on? Oh, I was frightened. I could imagine. Did you ever think in your wildest dreams that this would go on in a place of learning? No, I was not prepared for this. So when you took the SATs 2 years ago and you decided to reach out to Virginia Tech, you never imagined in your wildest dreams that a madman would go on a shooting rampage. No, I didn't. No S! This is all no S. It's not news. It's feelings.
Yeah.
It's feelings, but it's not news. I want some timelines. I want to know when the shooting started, when the cops showed up, when they went in the building, and what they did. I saw a lot of cops hiding. I'm not passing judgment yet, but I have the feeling that I may. So far, the news is the shooting starts at 9:15. The 911 call comes in at 9:45, a full half hour later, which I find unbelievable in a time when every student had a cell phone and anyone in the building and near the building had a cell phone. And then the cops arrive at 9:48.
Right.
So this guy starts shooting and close to over a half hour later, the cops show up. I can't believe that. Look. I know that we don't have every I dotted and every T crossed, and people don't want to report erroneous news. but preface it with, this is what we know so far. Here's the timeline. Show me a map. Show me the journey the kid took. Show me where he entered the building. Show when the first cops arrived. Surely we know this stuff. I don't want another interview with a parent. I don't want to read another email from a Virginia Tech alumni who's heartbroken over this. I want to know what went on. And then the second thing is I want to hear about this kid's family and his parents. Because we never stop talking about the counselors and what they could have done and the cops and what they could have done and the roommates and what they could have done. What about the kid's parents?
What about the revelation that he was a disaffected loner?
Yes. What about that? Yeah, shocking. Normally, these guys are captain of the football team and life of the party.
Right.
As it turns out, he was a loner.
He actually had to take the lampshade off his head so he could take aim.
He kept to himself. He gave people the willies. He wore the sunglasses inside. Yes, no S, no S, no S. I want to hear about the parents. I want to know what they did or didn't do. And people say you can't blame them. And I heard somebody saying that these are victims as well. His parents are victims as well. I'm not so sure about that. You have a clinically depressed, despondent son who's wearing sunglasses at the dinner table and staring down at his peas like he wants to kill himself and the world. I think you should get that kid some help. And I do blame the parents until I hear otherwise. And that's what I want the news to talk about. Because let me say something, news folks. The way to prevent this from happening again is to get at the root of the problem. It's not to talk to counselors that got the heebie-jeebies when they spoke to this guy when he was in his 20s or teens or whatever he was in. The damage had been done at that part. You want society to step in? You want people that are overworked and underpaid to spend? It's like really what we're asking, what the media is saying to the counselors making 27 grand a year. Why didn't you drop everything else you were doing and focus full time on a guy that may or may not have just been a moody teen going through a troubled period? Of course, we don't have enough people for that. There's not a counselor for every student. There's a counselor for every 1,000 students. And they have a lot of screwed up people. And we can't do that. And neither can the cops. And neither can the teachers. But I'll tell you who can, the parents. The parents can see this coming early and often and get the kid either medication, counseling, or both. But does the media talk about that? No. Parents were victims. Why didn't the counselors do their jobs? Well, yes. The counselors aren't ever going to do their jobs well enough to prevent this again. We could stop this at home. We could.
It's
Danny,
a complicated
maybe,
topic
maybe.
Because the kid's 23. What I mean, when do the parents stop being responsible? We were talking about
they can stop being responsible when he was three if they were raping him till then, is I believe right. Adam's point. Whatever, if they did whatever it is, Adam is in the darkest recesses of horror shows. He got chained up in the basements and things like that. If they did that till he was 14 and he killed people at 25, they still did it, and Adam's absolutely correct.
I say.
But Adam said, here's the only place you lost me. The only place you lost me. I say they did it until somebody shows me otherwise, and that's un-American.
Yes. Well, I say either
they didn't do it till someone shows you otherwise. It says so.
Either they created a monster or they didn't notice a monster. Either
you're close
way,
enough to my age. Don't you have friends with teenagers that dress all in goth and all look spooky?
Kimmel's kid's in jail right now. Told me never to mention that.
My kid's still a little bit too young, really, but a lot of my contemporaries that I know have kids in their mid-teens, even 20s. And they're all, the ones that don't want to be Paris Hilton want to be Marilyn Manson, but they aren't spooky.
Right.
They're just a club.
That's right.
Yeah,
your kid,
he's cosmetic.
Your kid creeped out every person he came across. Why didn't you
that
notice it?
That one is something.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll be back.
I'm explosive.
Hold on. I know we're out of time, but Mike?
Yeah?
You think that the cops caught Cho and then released him?
Listen, I was sick at home the other day when this was all happening. What was this, Tuesday or something?
16th.
Oh, Christ. Remember when I said real fast?
Anyways, I was at home, and when this was all going on, it was going over the crawl that some kid got whacked off in the university, and I kind of tuned into it to a little bit, and they went to a guy, when they were searching for the guy, the girl's boyfriend and all that stuff, they searched two guys. Like, the camera had, like, the camera was on these two guys, and one of them was an Asian guy who was bald, and the other guy was a Caucasian guy.
So you think you saw him? You saw him. Okay.
And I have not seen this again. I'm searching everywhere for this.
Do I sound this crazy, by the way, when I'm harping on stuff? All right, Mike, interesting. I'm sorry we're plumb out of time, but that is interesting, and it would be a very interesting revelation
if
that
came out.
You know what
they should do? If when they find this guy guilty, watch this, ready for pro, they should definitely send him to Alcatraz.
Ah.
Hey, speaking of Alcatraz.
Good segue.
Adam Carolla is sentencing two people to the notorious Alcatraz Island for one night. Go to AdamCarolla.com right now and tell us why you should be locked down. If you're chosen as the winner, you're going to gain your freedom and $2,500. Don't forget The Condemned, starring Steve Austin. 10 people will fight. 9 people will die. Only one will survive.
And you get to watch it live. Yes.
The Condemned in theaters Friday, April 27th.
I want to thank Monique and Jeff Ross, David Arquette, Eddie Griffin, and, of course, mention Danny Bonaducci. Morongo Casino Saturday, sponsored by IO West. Close up. Oh, wait, no. IO West, and then Close Up tonight. There we go. Close Up tonight on the TV Guide channel, 4 o'clock and 9 p.m. You get a little shot of Bonaducci and a glimpse into his world.
Oh,
so,
and I'm on Scarborough Country tonight.
I forgot that as well.
Sorry.
Well, so until next time, is Adam Carolla saying mahalo.
Body of a killer, heart of a poet. You're my hero, and you don't even know it.